Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I can drag it into the bathroom and drown it in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you? Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
Welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here. Tonight on the big program, our good friend Dave Johnson from the Campaign for America's Future is going to be here talking about President Clinton's trade ideas, going to be talking about jobs, how do we get the economy going again, and maybe a couple of things about the occupation. After all, it is our Future Friday, and we'll be talking to Dave from the Campaign for America's Future. Also, in the second hour, Jessica Randall, regulatory policy analyst with OMB Watch, is going to be here talking about the Regulatory Accountability Act that the Republicans rammed through yesterday. And you got to go look. At some point, it sounds wonderful. Oh, we want accountability, regulatory accountability. It does nothing. There is no accountability in this. What it does is it's designed to tear down regulations. It's designed to open us up to a whole plethora of problems that we've had in the past. So it'll be interesting to talk to Jessica about that. Also in the second hour, Jim Savage, president of the United Steelworkers Local 10-1, going to be here talking about the refinery being closed at Marcus Hook and what that's going to mean to the area and to the country, because I got to be honest with you, I see our capacity to produce energy as a national security problem. If we ship all of those jobs overseas, if we ship all of that capacity, all of that production overseas, I think we got problems. And it's like a lot of things. I mean, you look at our manufacturing base, the same thing has been hollowed out. Why? Profits. I mean, that's it. It doesn't get any simpler than that. How much more money the 1% can stuff in their pockets at the expense of the rest of us? Those are our guests for tonight. We're also going to take your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. So the assault on the poor and the working class continues. Yesterday, Newt was in Iowa again. The second time he has repeated this. I just don't understand how a guy as smart as he is, with the history background that this guy has got, can look at child labor laws and say, they're truly stupid, knowing what you know about the history of child labor in this country. But he goes on to say, really poor children in really poor neighborhoods have no habits of working and have nobody around them who works, so they have no habit of showing up on Monday. He says they have no habit of staying all day. They have no habit of, I do this and you give me cash, unless it's illegal. You know, I hear that and I go, you know, stodgy old white guy. A guy who's probably never missed a meal in his life, has no idea what it means to be poor, has no idea what the circumstances are, but boy, he can sure pass judgment, can he? Now, for me, I've always said these welfare programs should be jobs programs, and they almost tried back in the 90s, a half attempt, basically just to kick people off, but had you done what I've always advocated for, and you know, no more welfare programs, none of that stuff, jobs programs. Get people a reason to wake up and go to work every day. But you know, if you remember, not last month, he was at Harvard University talking about putting kids to work, you know, cleaning bathrooms. You see, his idea is get rid of all those union janitors. And, you know, just have one master janitor was his idea. And then you get those local kids come in for minimum wage and scrub the toilets and scrub the floors. It's this mentality, and it is the Republican mentality, that we can get the most exploitable, the most desperate to do the work. And then we drive the wages through the floor. Because, you know, we shouldn't have janitors or teachers or policemen or anyone who's making a living and getting by. We should be able to get them for the cheapest wage possible. As rock bottom as possible, get the most desperate people to do it. That's their mentality. And this, again, highlights Newt's positions. I mean, he's all in favor. Hey, put those kids to school. What about actually teaching them to read, write, do that stuff? Why not? And yeah, I liked your idea, Newt, of paying kids a buck or two to read a book. There's some incentive there. You've incentivized things. I'm in favor of that. Why don't you go run with that? But you know, there's no profit in that, is there? Well, at least not on the short term. And, you know, as this whole attack on the poor continues, Newt came out and said another dumb thing. You know, he said that, you know, people take their food stamps and they go on trips to Hawaii. Gotta go to Hawaii. I got my welfare check. I got my $130 this month to feed myself. I'm gonna save that. I'm just not gonna eat for 6, 7, well, Hawaii from here, probably 10, maybe 15 months. I'm just not gonna eat for 15 months. And I'll take that $135 each month and I'll put it in the little thing and then I'll go to Hawaii. That's what Newt thinks. And again, another one of those moments where you go, here's a guy who's got his head up his keister, because the reality is you cannot use the money that's there for that kind of thing. Now, he's come out and said, well, you know, we don't give them food stamps. And I remember food stamps when I was a kid, hated them. And I wish that on no one. He says you give them credit cards and the credit cards can use for anything. That's not true. In fact, the according to the agricultural department, the people who run the supplemental nutrition program, households can use benefits to buy groceries or to buy seeds and plants to produce food. That's it. They can't use the money to go to restaurants. Not happening. They can't buy other types of food and beverages, you know, like beer or wine or, you know, liquor or any of that stuff. No vitamins, no food that can be eaten in the stores, no hot foods, none of that. They can't do it. But, you know, you got the neuter out there. He's got to push his frame. Hey, you know, I go to Hawaii 100 times and I saw him there. I saw that person with their EBT card where they get $134 a month. I saw them. They were there. Probably driving around with the welfare queen. But here again, this is a guy who, you know, a serial vacationer. A man who gets around, and good for him. But I'm not guessing you're seeing too many people from Pennsylvania on welfare taking that trip. And if you do find that one, that maybe possibly, and I even doubt that, you deal with it. You don't pitch the whole program out. You don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. I'm more concerned about the welfare queen, the welfare king, the welfare corporation. I'm more concerned about them at the top. Because they take much more than that $134 a month. You look at Pepco Holding. Again, I don't even know what Pepco Holding does. But I know for every dollar of profit that they made, we, the taxpayers, paid them almost 58 cents back in addition. So they not only did they pay no taxes, we paid them 58 cents on every dollar that they profited from. Does that make any sense? And the answer is no. And here in the state of Pennsylvania, you got Grover Norquist, the most powerful man in the country, evidently, who said, no, can't have that impact fee, can't have that drilling tax, can't have any of that. It's a tax. You signed the pledge. No. And now he's saying, you can't extend the payroll tax to help middle-class families. And I'm trying to figure out how that works. How do you get to a position where you're saying on one hand, you can't raise fees or taxes or anything on corporations while every other state in the country does it, yet we're going to raise taxes on every middle-class family in this country, and that's okay? I'm trying to figure out how the head of Americans for Tax Reform is coming to that. He's supposed to be for lower taxes, right, for everybody. Well, no. Lower taxes for the people who pay his salary. Lower taxes for the people who fund his little think tank. Not for you and me. If he gets his way, and if the Republicans get their way, we will see $1,000 increase in our taxes for middle-class families across this country. And again, the whole idea from their perspective is simple. Slow the economy down, make the economy worse, so that the president doesn't have a chance come next November. And, you know, they're doing a great job. You got to give the investor class and the Republicans and some Bentley Democrats, you've got to give them credit. Because if you look at the latest numbers that have just come out, according to the Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis, the share of income as a percentage of national income has fallen to the lowest level that it has been in 60 years. According to the Fed of St. Louis, it has dropped to 57.1%. Now, year 2000, before W, we saw 65% going to income, wages, things that you and I work for. So you're seeing a massive shift. I mean, that is enormous. Think about how big the economy is. Think about how much the national income, and then think about how much of it went to you and me. We lost 8%. We are now getting, you and me, the people who produce the wealth of this country, are now sharing the lowest percentage in the last 60 years. And not surprisingly, for the second year in a row, median income in this country has dropped. But guess what? Guess what? Per employee profits, that's right, have gone up for the second year in a row. So you're producing more, and you're making less. And now you're seeing the consolidation. Who has what? Whose hands are holding the wealth of this country? Consolidating even more. In fact, the millionaires who control this planet, they control 40% of the global wealth. So you and I, we're getting screwed. And the thing is we know we're getting screwed, which is why I think you're seeing people out in the streets, which is why I think you're seeing some discussion about it. In fact, a poll was just done recently that found 9 out of 10 workers don't expect to get a raise. And that if they do get a raise, it's not going to be enough to cover the inflation of food and gas. So explain to me again. Who's creating jobs? Explain to me again who in Washington's got your back. You know, I'm not going to tell you it's 100% the Democrats, but I'll tell you it is not. It is not the Republicans. And you look at this, again, you look at this payroll tax. You look at the unemployment issue. They're trying to figure out what they can get out of it. What can they screw us out of? How can they hold us hostage? Remember last November? Did a nice job holding us hostage. They got their Bush tax cuts extended for 2 years, unemployment only for one. And here we are back at this time again. This again, at the barrel of the gun. And now they're going, well, gee, what do we really want? Because they know the Democrats are never going to allow the unemployment to stop, and they're not gonna let the taxes go up on the middle class. They know that. The Republicans already know it. So it is. You know, what can we get out of it? How much can we screw them? And that's what they're working on. And I guess you got to give them credit. They know a good crisis when they see one, and they will never let it go to waste. Anyway, got to take your calls. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. When we come back, Dave Johnson, Campaign for America's Future. We want the world and we want it now.
Just right. The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. The Teamsters Union has again refused to cross picket lines at U.S. food distribution facilities in Swedesboro and Bridgeport, New Jersey. The Teamsters say locals 1414 in Philadelphia and 676 in Collingswood, New Jersey, set up the sympathy picket lines. It's in support of an unfair labor practice strike by maintenance workers at U.S. Foods' Streeter, Illinois location. The Teamsters say sympathy picket lines have sprung up at 12 U.S. food facilities across the country. Some 2,000 Teamsters have refused to cross the picket lines in 9 states. A rail strike could happen by December 6th unless 3 rail unions are able to reach agreement with America's major freight railroads. The Brotherhood of Locomotive Engineers and Trainmen and the American Train Dispatchers refused to agree to another extension on contract talks. The talks are overseen by a special presidential board. If no contract agreements are reached by the end of a mandated cooling-off period, December 6th, a strike is possible. Americans United for Change is out with a new web video accusing Republicans of being willing to raise taxes on 160 million middle-class Americans. The issue is the payroll tax break that expires December 31st. Republicans appear willing to hold that working family tax break hostage to their budget-cutting demands, even as the GOP protects millionaires and billionaires from tax increases. Federal workers could be looking at 5 years without a pay raise if Republicans in the Senate succeed in extending a pay freeze through 2015. Jesse Russell reports.
The extension of the pay freeze and a plan to slash the federal workforce by 10% is being proposed by the GOP to cover the cost of extending a payroll tax cut. President Barack Obama, who is seeking the payroll tax cut extension, would like to cover the cost with a 3.25% surtax on income exceeding $1 million. The Republicans are opposed to such a surtax because it would raise taxes on millionaires. If the payroll tax cut is not extended, working Americans will see a tax increase of 2%. However, the Republican plan doesn't put everything on the backs of federal workers and middle-class Americans. Under their plan, the country's highest earners would be required to pay the full cost of Medicare premiums, and they would no longer be qualified for unemployment benefits.
This is what democracy looks like, Wisconsin's Worker Uprising, a one-hour radio documentary produced by Workers Independent News in conjunction with WORT. Get your copy today at laborradio.org. This newscast made possible in part through underwriting from the AFL-CIO. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Time for change. It's time to rearrange.
Keeping the chambers of commerce within their gated communities. The Rick Smith Show.
You can't tell me we're gonna make it somehow. I heard a wise man say revolution starts now. I think it's time for
change. And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Our quote of the day from the folks over at the Too Much Online blog. They quote Karen Katz, CEO of the luxury retail chain Neiman Marcus. She's commenting on the doubling of her company's most recent quarterly profits. She says, the most affluent luxury customer is spending with confidence. That's because our economy is catering to the people who would shop at Neiman Marcus, that 1%, who, now look, everybody wants to go in there and maybe buy a little, but we're talking about the people who go in and just, I'll take all of it. They're doing very, very well. Anyway, the holiday season is upon us, and the spending season is upon us. Yes, I know, it is the gift-giving time, so if you're going to be giving, why not give the gift of employment this holiday season by making sure that what you buy helps your neighbor? Look for local producers, local manufacturers, and local products, because the job you may save may actually be your own. And I came across an interesting statistic. If every American spent $64 of the $200 they spent on Black Friday, we could have created 200,000 new job. So buy American goods and give American-made gifts this holiday season. There you go. Did my public service announcement for the day. It is our Future Friday, and here for our Future Friday is Dave Johnson from the Campaign for America's Future. Dave, thanks for taking time for me.
Thanks for having me on. And I'm making some time out. I'm trying to pick out whether I'm going to buy myself a Maserati or a Ferrari for Christmas here. So,
well, good for you.
Did
you hit it big?
Celebrate my 1%-edness. That's a joke, by the way. Anybody that's listening better know that's a joke.
I was going to say, they must pay you very well over at the Campaign for America's Future.
Oh, yeah, really well. I get about, what, $6-7 million a year on a, well, it's slow now,
do
so
they pay
probably
you in,
just five.
See, I thought they paid you in cheese.
Yeah, you get, what, $10 million, don't you, for the show?
Yeah, let me hold my breath on that one.
Yeah,
but
right.
You know, you look at this holiday season, and the reality is one of the things I've been preaching for the longest time is buy local, buy domestic, buy something that your neighbor you may have produced or you produced yourself.
Well, you know, I had a post just this week, and it's titled "Buy American, Shop American." So I'm going to extend your public service announcement a little bit, because if you go to ourfuture.org and scroll down a ways, or just click on my name somewhere and find this post, "Buy American, Shop American." I list a bunch of companies that make stuff in the United States, like New Balance, Loggerhead Apparel, Diamond Gusset Jeans, Step 2 Toys, Okabashi Shoes, USAB2C.com has a whole bunch of things just made in the United States.
Okabashi?
It's Okabashi Shoes, yeah. Let's see, where are they?
Okay.
But they're in Buford, Georgia.
No kidding.
Yeah, but USAB2, and that's the number 2C.com, is a website where everything they have there that's for sale is made in America. So I thought I'd just add to your public service.
That's beautiful. I understand it.
Or
I understand
you can get a Ferrari or a Maserati if you want.
Okay, well, once I hit the lottery, if I ever play, I will get myself one. And USAB2C.com is for United States of America Business to Consumer. So there you go.
Yeah.
We'll put a link at the
Corvette, though, not a Maserati or Ferrari. Corvette's made in the U.S.
There you go. We'll put a link at the RickSmithShow.com. So let's get to the bottom line, because we've got all this cheap plastic made stuff all over the country. Most of it from China. Most of it from places where we have massive trade agreements. And I guess President Bill Clinton has a new book out talking about that very trade agreement.
You know, and he was just on the NewsHour today talking about some of his jobs ideas. He only talks a little bit about the trade agreements in his book. Now, this is a very interesting book. I enjoyed reading it. You know, I have been covering the Clinton Global Initiative for several years. He actually invited me himself at that meeting with bloggers several years ago that got some attention. His book is titled "Back to Work: Why We Need Smart Government for a Strong Economy." And first, let me just quickly sum up my feelings about the book. And I have this. It was exclusive for Alternet, so this is over at Alternet. This book just came out. It was just finished, and it was finished so recently that he talked about like things like in the Republican debate, how they shouted out, "Let him die," about the guy with no health care.
Right.
So he just finished it, but he didn't. I just wish it had come out just a little later, because I really want to know what the Occupy movement might have done to help him crystallize his thoughts. Because the book is just almost there, and it's not there. It's a list of ideas, policy ideas, and they're all good, and we'll talk about a couple of them. But the problem is that it's like incremental change, you know, little ideas, little patches that you put on the problem. And Occupy has come along and really made us understand that what's really going on is not that we need to, like, tweak a few things here and there, you know, and change a few policies, but that we have a systemic problem, that we have this war going on now where the 1% are literally waging war on us to try to just grab everything that's left. And I just wish that I could talk to him now and find out his thoughts about the Occupy thing and whether this is changing his thinking.
Well, I don't think it would change. I don't think it would change his thinking, because he believes. I think he believes in the system and not in total, complete, fundamental change of that system.
I just want to know what he says about Occupy. You're right.
Oh, okay.
And he hangs around with the CEO types, you know, people who have done really well, you know, and the Clinton Global Initiative, they really have their hearts in the right place, I think. They really want to try to make the world better. It's all about solving problems. And like I said, the book is full of good, you know, little things to do. But the problem is that this is, these people have all been, you know, they're the 1%. They're really successful from it, so they're not going to be about changing it. They'll be about helping people as much as they can without having to give up too much of what they got, without having to change the system that did so well for them. So, but he does talk about trade in one place in the book, which is interesting. He doesn't say a lot. He says we need a national economic strategy, so he's close to talking about an industrial strategy, but he calls it an economic strategy. He says that we need trade agreements to increase exports, which is fine.
Yep.
You know, that's good, but not if it opens the floodgates to making us compete with people who are in places where they're not allowed to have a say, and so they can't ask for good wages, benefits, and protections. And then that gets us competing with that. We cannot win that.
Right. Well, let me ask you this. You know, in reading what he had to say, do you think he regrets NAFTA and GATT and the WTO, or is he completely down with it and thinks this is the right, he followed the right path?
He will say that NAFTA was intended to be more of a two-way agreement than it turned out to be, that China was intended to be more of a two-way deal than it turned out to be. And then the only thing really he says in the book was that we didn't enforce trade laws under Bush, he says. He says, we lost manufacturing jobs in every one of the 8 years after I left office. One of the reasons is that enforcement of our trade laws dropped sharply. But as I wrote about it, he enabled, by being such a centrist and not understanding the attack we're under, he didn't set up enough protections and enabled Bush to just turn things around so fast after Bush got in office and to come in and enable the system in which Bush could just refuse to enforce trade laws and stuff. So even if those NAFTA and such, which I don't agree with, I don't think they were written to be fair, even if they were written to be fair, they could be used against us, and that's what happened.
You know, you look at this, and you know, you look at all of these agreements. There's virtually no teeth in any of these laws. I mean,
we can
go, and what bothers me, especially with NAFTA and these other agreements, is they go before a secret tribunal to solve problems or to solve their cases, and we never get to know who, what, where. We don't get to know any of that. And in fact, they have the ability, and this is where, you know, the people who fear one world government have a valid point. No law we pass is safe because they can force it to be overturned through these secret tribunals.
That's right. And also the problem with China is that because they're selling so much to us and not buying from us, they're ending up with literally trillions of U.S. dollars, and so they can use that as a hammer on us and threaten us with it and say, look, you try to enforce this, then we'll do so-and-so, and we won't loan you any more money. In other words, it enabled them to get us over a barrel. So the trade agreements were a problem, but Clinton has some good ideas in the book, and let me just bring one up. It's what he talked about on the NewsHour, and that's this whole idea, and Leo Girard of the Steelworkers Union talked about this. He's been talking about it for years. Leo Girard calls it cash for caulking, I think. Isn't that right?
Yeah.
Instead of cash for clunkers. And the idea is that you can retrofit buildings to be energy efficient, that it pays for itself. If you have a high gas and electric bill at your house or an oil heating bill or something, and you can get a hold of some money, that's the key here, to insulate everything, put double pane windows in, put all kinds of insulation on the roof and all of that, your gas bill and your energy bill goes down by enough to pay the payments on the loan to get that done. And the problem is that nobody will finance that. The big banks don't care about little things like that. So Obama has announced an initiative to get that going. The AFL-CIO has a big initiative to help get that going.
Yeah, I think I saw something today. I think I saw something today, the Building Better Buildings initiative that they were, that they're pushing. And, you know, it's something that we've been talking about since, not just Leo Gerard, but something they've been talking about since the 70s.
Jerry Brown talked about it in his campaign in 92.
Absolutely. One of the things he wanted to do was go through every house in this country and rewire it. Because according to him, we lose something like 60% of our energy through transmission lines.
Well, that's not in houses. That's like getting the energy from one part of the country to the other, and that's right. And we have this old, I think, 1800s, 1900s electric system. But if you go in and retrofit houses and commercial buildings and government buildings, this is what happens. Your payments go down a lot. That pays for whatever the upfront cost is, which has to be financed, not necessarily, but might have to be financed. But then, after all that's out of the way and you're done and you've paid it off, your energy bills are lower. If you're a company, your energy bills are lower. Your costs are lower, so you're much more competitive. So it actually makes the economy much better. But nobody will get started, even since Jerry Brown, like we said, even before that. It pays for itself, but nobody will finance it. So that's why the AFL-CIO coming in, and I think the teachers union and a few others, and now Obama's initiative, and that's a big thing Clinton's been pushing, so I want to give him a lot of credit for that.
Yeah, but here's the thing. For years, I've been advocating energy-independent homes and buildings because we've got the technology. We just don't have the political will to do it, and the reason being is you've got these big energy producers who say, who's going to keep paying us?
Exactly, and that was Clinton's argument, was that the government's got to do it, and it's these energy producers who say, you know, they say everything they can to stop the government from doing that. And, you know, we're seeing it now. They say, oh, well, that's just government spending or whatever they have to say. And it's really, it's like high-speed rail. It's like the new thing with fuel efficiency standards. They're trying to make people dislike government because they're trying to block the government from doing things to help us pay less for energy. Yeah. So, I mean, it's just right there in front of us. If you can get the money to retrofit your house, your business, government buildings to be more energy efficient, it pays for itself. And from then on, you pay less.
Sounds like common sense to me.
Yeah.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're with Dave Johnson from the Campaign for America's Future, Our Future Friday today. Their website, ourfuture.org. We got a link at thericksmithshow.com. Now, last line of questioning I've got for you. You know, yesterday,
right,
big day in Washington as Boeing and the Machinist Union came to an agreement. And the way I'm seeing this pretty much undoes that whole argument the right now has against the NLRB because the system actually worked. The machinists in Boeing, with the help of the NLRB and everybody else, figured this thing out.
That's right. The NLRB enforced the law that put some pressure on Boeing, and it helped the workers. And the purpose of the NLRB, it says right there in the law, is to encourage collective bargaining. They did it. It worked. And the Republican argument will be completely different tomorrow, and it'll still be against the NLRB.
Well, of course it will be, because they hate workers.
They hate unions. They hate the NLRB because its mission by law is to help workers in collective bargaining, help keep that going because it helps the country and it helps the larger economy. But the 1% hate it because it causes them to make a little bit less this quarter, even if it means they make more later.
Yeah. Oh, and also it means they can't take $50 million for their CEO and $40 million for their CFO and $40 million for their president without having to look at somebody across the negotiating table and explain why they're taking that.
That's right. That's right. And even though all of those things you said hurt the company in the long term, hurt the economy in the long term, it helps them right now, and that's what they want. So
that's all. Last question.
Big news on the NLRB. That's really good.
Yeah, it is. The last question I've got for you. Did you watch the discussion over the Democracy and Workplace Fairness Act?
Yeah.
Which is neither democratic nor fair, but it's a lovely name.
Right, and it was about blocking another rule which will help. Okay, the NLRB is voting on, or voted actually, to move forward, there's still an approval process, but to move forward on making the time between when a union decides they want to have a vote for an election and when the election happens a little shorter. And that makes it harder for companies to delay this, and it makes it so that they have less time to pump their propaganda out about how oh, the union people will come and beat you up every night if you vote for, you know, all these things. So the House of Representatives, the Republicans voted to block this. Now, it doesn't go anywhere because the Senate won't approve it, and even if the Senate approved it, the president wouldn't sign it.
Right.
But that was the argument. You know, they just hate unions.
It was another day that they didn't have to work. It was another day they didn't have to create jobs. It was another day they didn't have to answer the American people. It was just a dog and pony show for their investors, for their donors, for the people who put the patches on their NASCAR jacket. That's simple. Dave Johnson, Campaign for America's Future, ourfuture.org, the website. Appreciate the time, brother. Always great talking to you.
Thanks for having me on.
All right, let's take a quick break. Right back after this, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Perhaps you're part of Wall Street's richest 1%. Yet, deep in the deepest part of your hedge fund heart, you secretly support the We Are the 99% people. Taking a big step even further, you might actually desire to join the Occupy Wall Street movement in one of its tent camps to show your solidarity. But, my goodness, there's just no way you can settle into one of those grungy plastic tents that the movement people are in. Well, fret no more, my uber-rich friend, for that's why Neiman Marcus exists. In the nick of time, the luxury retailer has come out with its Christmas book, featuring 171 pages of fabulous gift ideas for the fabulously wealthy. And there it is, on page 6263, in a four-color spread, the Dream Folly Tent. It's an 18-foot diameter yurt that, according to the catalog description, is inspired by the whimsical TV show I Dream of Jeannie. And what a whimsy it is, with an opulent interior that, as Neiman puts it, goes beyond your wildest, most decadent dreams. You'll sink into a bevy of one-of-a-kind, down-filled designer pillows, zone out on the tent's fine textiles in colors selected, quote, to evoke the bubbles of a warm, soothing bath. And be protected from even the darkest of nights by a custom handcrafted crystal chandelier. The catalog assures purchasers that Neiman Marcus can have a dream tent installed on your estate grounds in the blink of an eye. And if the company can deliver in, say, the Hamptons, how hard would it be to set you up in a downtown Occupy encampment? This is Jim Hightower saying, yes, even the wealthiest elites can stand with the people. Then withdraw to their dream tents. Prices start at $75,000. While that's a bit pricey, imagine the solidarity it will build with those protesting the excesses of Wall Street elites.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at HightowerLowdown.org.
Proudly blue in an ocean of red, Rick Smith.
Now we all ought to feel just a little bit guilty when we look into the eyes of our kids. Cause brothers, it's fact, if we take and don't put back, they'll have to pay for all we did. So let's leave some dew up above us. Let's leave some green on the ground. It's only as it follows.
Another thing to pass on down would be maybe clean water. That would be a good idea. Maybe clean air, clean water, some of that stuff. Just a thought. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. I mean, you look up in, what is it, Dimmock, PA, where back in 2008 the state let Cabot Oil and Gas drill in on these folks' properties. And he ended up with 18 of these people with their wells contaminated with methane. Stories of the residents coming out with their water brown, making them sick. The one woman said that her well spontaneously combusted. It blew up. They had horses and other pets who just, you know, they just lost all their hair. Just all went away. And that stuff happens naturally, of course. It's natural. Wasn't because of the drillers. No, no. Not to mention all these people who, you know, put their life savings into this property, into these houses, now worth basically worthless. Because who wants to move on the land that's contaminated? Nobody. So in 2010, the Department of Environmental Protection here in the state of Pennsylvania fined Cabot Oil and Gas, and then said, you know, hey, you're gonna have to compensate these people. In fact, you're gonna have to permanently provide them with drinking water. All of the 11 families who are still there, gonna have to permanently. To me, that means permanently, forever, on and on, on infinitum. Well, Wednesday, Cabot told these folks, sorry, you're basically on your own, because we're done with it. And they told the state, we're done. We're not paying them anymore. So the people there, the one guy that they quoted in the article is Scott Ely, a 42-year-old guy who says, look, we're desperate. We don't know where we're going to go, because I guess he called a water company, said how much to provide us with the water that we need. They said $100 a day. And you look at the reality in all of this, these people are at the margin. You know, everything they've got is tied up in this property. And you got these oil companies who were wealthy beyond belief who can starve you out. Or in this case, you know, thirst you out. And you look at the New York Times did a story not too long ago, that you've seen all these people signing these leases over to these companies. With the fine print that gives these companies the right to do just about anything they want to do. And basically, if there's any contamination, if there's anything left over, basically you're on your own. And you look here in the state, our governor wants to say, God, yeah, we want to go full throttle, and we don't want oversight, we don't want all that much in the way, because after all, regulations kill jobs, right? Yeah, Kasich in Ohio, who wants to open up state and federal parks. What the heck? Open up state land. Yes, put it right next to the school. It's nuts. New York's talking about allowing the drilling. They've got a moratorium right now. They're talking about opening it up, too. Also, it could put the drinking water of 9 million people in New York City at risk. But hey, you know, it's okay. Can you imagine 9 million people with no hair? The hair just started to fall out. I mean, look at these animals. But it just happens. Hair just falls out, Jake. I mean, look at you. You're drinking frack water?
No, I'm not. I mean, we're joking about it. But seriously, the case involving the company who was told by the state to provide water, why isn't the attorney general of the state going after them and saying, hey, look, you were told?
Because they're bought and paid for.
That sounds like a nice retort, Rick, but seriously, how could they possibly get out of an agreement?
It's not a nice retort. It is what it is. If the people who are in charge of enforcing the laws are not enforcing the laws, what other conclusion do you come to? It's not a nice retort. It's reality. If they're looking the other way, if they're saying, oh my goodness, regulations kill jobs and we need these job creators to come in here and create jobs, our environment be damned, what other conclusion would you come to?
I would take the recourse of looking at every available option I had in a court of law.
Again, that's you. You're not one of these people who are saying we need these frackers at all costs. We've got politicians, people in political office, and the attorney general is a political office with future aspirations of who knows. That's what it gets you. I'll tell you, we're in for some big trouble in the future. I think we've just let this go. I don't know if you've seen this story that in order to get the middle class tax break extended, in order to get the unemployment done, Republicans are saying, well, we're going to put all of our wet dreams into that bill. Because they know Democrats are not going to turn their back on the unemployed. They're not going to turn their back on middle-class families. So the Republicans want to tie in this Keystone XL project into it. Going to stick it in there through the back door, which, you know, is exactly what one would expect. And they're going to fold a number of other things in there as well. And here's my problem. You look at I just saw a story of Bloomberg News. And they said that renewable energy, for the first time, is now attracting more investment than the oil and gas industry. You're starting to see investors and companies and people going, we should be investing in wind and solar and wave and biomass. We should be doing that. In fact, last year, wind, solar, and wave and biomass drew in about $187 billion worth of investment, and the natural gas, oil, and coal industry drew in about $157,000. So it was $157 billion. So you're talking huge money here. And the reality is, if you look at, you put coal next to solar or wind, or you put oil next to them, over the long haul, the renewable energy is much better bang for a buck, much cheaper. Maybe a little bit more upfront, but over the long haul, much better. And you look at the International Energy Agency, the IEA, who has traditionally been very fossil fuel friendly. They reported today that, like I just said, renewable energy is becoming cost competitive. So why do the Republicans want to destroy it? Why do you see them wanting to go after solar? Well, because solar doesn't pay that big freight. Once you put solar panels on your house, who do you pay? They can't bill you every month. Once you put a wind turbine up, they can't bill you every month. And I saw this article by one of these crackpots, one of these right-wing blogs, talking about Solyndra. And what grabbed me is kind of interesting. Is, you know, Solyndra, you know, collapsed, a whole bunch of reasons. But he's going after the workers. And he says, you know, the workers now are going to benefit from government largesse because they're going to get $13,000 each beyond unemployment, because they're going to be able to go be retrained. Because, and I think everybody realizes the Chinese are killing us. But he says that the Solyndra cost the taxpayers $500 million, and now they're getting special treatment. No, their jobs were destroyed because of our insane trade policies. The jobs were destroyed because we're not minding the store. And fortunately, there have been a group of 59 lawmakers who wrote a letter today to the president saying, hey, we can't strengthen our energy security or create jobs. We can't have economic growth by replacing Middle East petroleum products with unfairly traded clean energy technologies. We can't change one for the other and expect to be a superpower. And the letter, if you remember me talking about this Solar World Industries America and this group that they've got trying to push the president to try and go to the WTO and actually do something, you know, like I just talked to Dave Johnson about, actually hold those trade agreements, hold them to that. Solar World Industries is a German-owned company. Stop and think about this for a second. There is a German-owned company petitioning our government to do what's in the best interests of our country. We're not even doing that. We have to have a German-owned company tell our government to protect us from the Chinese. That, my friends, is just nuts. Quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Right back.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AskMe13.org. We are AskMe.
We make history happen!
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for The Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children. Ask me, Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. VBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call VBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call VBS at 1-866-902-2561.
There is no America. There is no democracy. There is only IBM and ITT and AT&T and DuPont, Dow, Union Carbide, and Exxon. Those are the nations of the world today.
Hello, back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. So I'm just stuck on this. Because you look, there are a number of solar companies that got into trouble, went down because, look, the Chinese basically they have targeted renewable energy. They have targeted clean energy as one of their national champion industries. They see that if they can produce their own energy, they can be energy independent. They are going to be dominant in the next 100 years. We're the dumb ones who don't seem to get it. We're the dumb ones who don't seem to get that we need to have an energy policy that encourages domestic consumption, domestic production, and, well, you know what? Alternatives. And investing in solar, to me, is, well, it's just common sense. The part here that I think people don't seem to get is the Chinese and their predatory practices are killing us. So when this guy's talking about the trade adjustment assistance going to these workers who got screwed over by our insane trade deals, with this tone of, you know, how dare we help those people? You know, if I get laid off, I'm just on my own. Yeah, but you didn't get killed because we have dumb laws. You didn't get knocked off because our trade deals are dumb. And I'm hung up on the fact that this solar world has come out and said, look, you know, you got to stop this. This is a German-owned company. Solar World is a German-owned company telling our government to protect us from the Chinese. How insane is that? How insane is it that we have to have another country tell us to protect ourselves from another country? I mean, I understand the steel workers having to go out there and do the legwork on all of these bizarre trade agreements and all of this stuff that's killing us. I get that because they have an interest right here. But a German company saying, hey, do something, anything, something. Isn't that nuts? I mean, or is it just me? I hear the drill baby drill call. The Republicans are telling me, drill baby drill, we need to produce domestically. And I see this report caught my eye. Evidently, we are going to be, and I can't believe this, from the news stories that I hear every day, I cannot believe that we are going to be, for the first time in 62 years, a net exporter of petroleum products, gasoline, diesel, and other oil-based fuels we are going to be shipping overseas. For the first time, we're shipping out more than we import. And maybe I'm the only one who sees it this way, and I hope I'm not, but gas, last time I checked, was $3.33 a gallon. Why are we shipping gasoline out of this country when it's $3.33 a gallon? I thought, according to the Republicans, high fuel prices because of Obama, because of him, because we're not evidently producing enough domestically. That's the reason gas prices are so high. Yet we're exporting more than we're importing. I'm of the mindset, if we're exporting so, why are we exporting so much? Why aren't we keeping it here at home and lowering the price? Oh, that's right. Oil is a global commodity. ExxonMobil and the big oil companies are global companies. They don't give a tinker's damn about the United States of America. What they care about, profit. Gotta have profit. Right, Jake? Gotta have profit.
Absolutely.
Got to fill the coffers. So when I see this, we're a net exporter. And I ask the question, why am I paying $3.33 a gallon at the pumps then? Where are the policymakers? Where are my Republican heroes? Where are my Republicans who care so much about the cost of a gallon of gasoline when we're exporting it? And not only are we exporting petroleum products like heating oil, we're also, and later on we're going to talk about this with Jim Savage, we're talking about closing a number of refineries. So I heard, you know, and maybe it's just my memory problem. I have one. Maybe that's it. Maybe my problem is I have a memory. Because I remember the Republicans whining and complaining and carrying on about, oh my gosh, we can't build a refinery. Oh, no refineries. They're closing three of them. Explain to me again what the problem with our regulations are, because I'm not getting it. Either we can't build refineries or we have too many. Either the price is too high or it's not. But the truck driver's on the road. Ask yourself, why are you paying over $4 a gallon for diesel when we're exporting it? Do you know what lower fuel prices in this country could do for the economy? Could help boost our economy. That $3.33 I'm putting into the gas tank when I should only be putting 99 cents in, I could have used that extra money. Could have bought other products. Could have got this economy going. They keep talking about food prices are going up because energy costs are soaring. We're exporting stuff. Do I have this wrong?
No, I think your logic makes a lot of sense. Unfortunately, Rick, quite honestly. You're the first one I heard talk about it. And my question is why?
Well, because we're bought and paid for. Oh. We've allowed these big multinational corporations to control this country for too damn long.
I'm shocked. Of course they are.
And I just, you know, you stop and you listen to the Republicans especially, and the Democrats are just as bad on some issues, but on this, it's the Republicans. Because, oh, we just need to drill more, open up those pristine areas, open up Anwar, open up all the bay, I forget what the bay is there in Alaska, open all that up. Do you know where that oil goes? Doesn't come here, we export it. It's just nuts.
Even when they were advocating opening up Anwar, we knew that it would, one, take 10 years to get online, and two, it was going to go to Asia. We knew that.
So now they're saying, well, we need to be able to pipe all this dirty, nasty stuff from Canada down to Texas. We need to cut right through the country and do all this stuff. Gotta have it. We're closing refineries. We're a net exporter of energy. I'm sorry. I just can't fathom the rationale to go forward on something like that, especially when we should be looking at how to get off the juice first and foremost, because if we took away the oil subsidies, we took away the coal subsidies, solar, wind, much cheaper. Back after this.
This is a pain in the American dream. This is a pain in the American dream.
Rick Smith Show.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. The Teamsters Union has again refused to cross picket lines at U.S. food distribution facilities in Swedesboro and Bridgeport, New Jersey. The Teamsters say locals 1414 in Philadelphia and 676 in Collingswood, New Jersey, set up the sympathy picket lines. It's in support of an unfair labor practice strike by maintenance workers at U.S. Foods' Streeter, Illinois location. The Teamsters say sympathy picket lines have sprung up at 12 U.S. food facilities across the country. Some 2,000 Teamsters have refused to cross the picket lines in 9 states. A rail strike could happen by December 6th unless 3 rail unions are able to reach agreement with America's major freight railroads. The Brotherhood of Locomotive Engineers and Trainmen and the American Train Dispatchers refused to agree to another extension on contract talks. The talks are overseen by a special presidential board. If no contract agreements are reached by the end of a mandated cooling-off period, December 6th, a strike is possible. Americans United for Change is out with a new web video accusing Republicans of being willing to raise taxes on 160 million middle-class Americans. The issue is the payroll tax break that expires December 31st. Republicans appear willing to hold that working family tax break hostage to their budget-cutting demands, even as the GOP protects millionaires and billionaires from tax increases. Federal workers could be looking at 5 years without a pay raise if Republicans in the Senate succeed in extending a pay freeze through 2015. Jesse Russell reports.
The extension of the pay freeze and a plan to slash the federal workforce by 10% is being proposed by the GOP to cover the cost of extending a payroll tax cut. President Barack Obama, who is seeking the payroll tax cut extension, would like to cover the cost with a 3.25% surtax on income exceeding $1 million. The Republicans are opposed to such a surtax because it would raise taxes on millionaires. If the payroll tax cut is not extended, working Americans will see a tax increase of 2%. However, the Republican plan doesn't put everything on the backs of federal workers and middle-class Americans. Under their plan, the country's highest earners would be required to pay the full cost of Medicare premiums, and they would no longer be qualified for unemployment benefits.
This is what democracy looks like. Wisconsin's Worker Uprising, a one-hour radio documentary produced by Workers Independent News in conjunction with WORT. Get your copy today at laborradio.org. This newscast made possible in part through underwriting from the AFL-CIO. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. So the Republicans are on it. Laser-like focus. Jobs, jobs, jobs. Honoring the pledge. That's right. There are 27 pages of flower, nice high-colored pictures, 21 pages of nice flowery words, but jobs, 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 laser-like focus. They passed the Regulatory Accountability Act. You gotta love that. The Regulatory Accountability Act. Almost sounds like they're going to do something. Just like on Wednesday when they passed the Democracy and Workforce Fairness Act, which is neither democratic nor fair, but it sounds nice, doesn't it? It actually sounds like they're doing something. I give them credit for being able to at least name their bills well, even if what's in it doesn't help us one bit. But anyway, they passed this Regulatory Accountability Act, and here to talk to us is Jessica Randall. She's a regulatory policy analyst at OMB Watch. Their website, ombwatch.org. Jessica, thanks for taking time for me.
Oh, good evening, Rick. I'm very glad to be here. It's a pretty important vote that we took today, and I'm glad that I'm going to have the chance to explain it just a bit.
Okay, well, Regulatory Accountability Act, what are we talking about?
Yeah, I know it's a great name, isn't it? And it really does mask the truth of what really happened today, which is that this why this partisan vote in which the majority of the House voted to really fundamentally overhaul the regulatory system as we've known it for the last 65 years. And what it would do is that this bill would add about 60 new layers of procedural analysis that agencies would have to go through whenever they're considering implementing a new regulation. They would revise something called formal rulemaking that is so expensive and so slow that there aren't even law school professors that think that we should be using it for anything. And most importantly, what it does is it gives all kinds of ways that corporate special interests can get in there and influence and slow down and even just basically shut down the regulatory process. So what I really say is I can't say this too strongly. The REA means that agencies would just have to do the cheapest thing instead of the thing that would actually keep people safe.
But, you know, I'm starting to think about this now that you've explained it to me, and I'm grateful that you did. Maybe I've been wrong all these months. Maybe the Republicans truly are with laser-like focus, focusing on creating jobs, because they've added 60 new layers to that rulemaking process. That means jobs. The lobbyists who are going to be able to make policy, they're going to have jobs. Maybe this is a good thing.
Well, I don't know. I certainly don't think that's the type of jobs that the Republicans mean to have on their agenda. And in fact, the Bureau of Labor Statistics does some pretty interesting research about the relationship between regulations and jobs. And what they found is that deregulation is actually a larger cost of job loss, and that they survey employers when they're laying off employees. And what they have found is that it is less than 1/3 of 1% of layoffs can actually be attributed to any sort of regulatory burden. So when you hear government regulations, what you really hear is Republicans just trying to shut down the government, not really trying to get in there and talk about really the laser-like job focus that they need to be having.
Well, I mean, the reality is, on a fundamental level, they despise government, so which has always amazed me, and maybe you've got a thought on it. It's not up your line of work, but I've never understood why people would vote for someone who, quite frankly, comes out and tells you, I don't believe in government working. Put me in charge of running your government.
You know, I think that's right. And one of the other things I would say is that when you hear them talking about government regulations, what you really should be thinking is they should be talking instead about important safeguards. What they're really talking about are the rules about whether there could be lead in your kids' toys or salmonella in your food. What they're really talking about are important laws that I know you care about, Rick, like the Occupational Safety and Health Act or the Mine Safety and Health Act. Government regulations are really just the basic standards and safeguards that form the core of what keeps Americans safe.
I'm right there with you. I grew up in Cleveland, Ohio, home of the Clean Water Act. Back before I was born, the lake there caught on, the river that fed into the lake caught on fire because it was so badly polluted. When I was a kid in the 70s, you could not swim in Lake Erie, and nothing was alive in Lake Erie. But because of the Clean Water Act, because we had sane, rational regulation, it's now thriving. In fact, it's got so much life in it, they're trying to figure out how to kill it.
Absolutely. And that's because the standard that underlies the Clean Water Act is the EPA is supposed to enact rules that have to do with keeping that water drinkable and keeping that water fishable. And that standard it's similar to standards in the Clean Air Act, which is about, you know, keeping the air so that we can breathe it. It's similar to standards in, you know, the OSHA Act and the Mine Safety and Health Act, where they're supposed to fundamentally think about what it takes to keep workers safe on the job site.
But if you go back to, and I forget who coined the phrase disaster capitalism, but if you stop and you think about it in that frame, that Republicans profit, people, I shouldn't say Republicans, business profits off a disaster. So if we can screw things up enough, there's profit there to be made in cleaning them up. So when the wells up in Dimmock, Pennsylvania are polluted by methane gas and those people can't drink the water that comes out of the ground, they've got to hire a private company in to bring bottled water at $100 a day. That's good profit.
Well, I don't know. I think that the evidence shows that regulations are actually important to making sure that people don't have to go through that kind of disaster in the first place. I think that's a pretty cynical job creation plan if that's what they've got. I'd like to see them focus on making sure that people are safe at their core and then doing some of the kinds of things like investment in infrastructure and other types of things that would really create meaningful jobs.
So I'm going back to this really euphemistically named bill, this Regulatory Accountability Act. Sounds so nice.
It does.
This cannot pass the Senate.
Well, that's probably right. Generally, we think the Senate is not very interested in taking up these bills so far. They've actually taken the opportunity to reject the RAINS Act twice in a couple of votes over the last couple of weeks. But what's concerning about the Regulatory Accountability Act is it has somehow taken on this veneer of reasonableness, because people think that, oh, it's just about procedure, it's a little bit arcane, and instead of really focusing on what's at stake here, which is the very process by which the government takes action to make sure that the best science is being reflected in the rules that protect us.
Right. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're here with Jessica Randall, regulatory policy analyst with OMB Watch, their website, ombwatch.org. We've got a link at thericksmithshow.com talking about the Regulatory Accountability Act. How wonderful that is. You know, I was watching on Wednesday, as the Republicans were putting on their dog and pony show about the Democracy and Workplace Fairness Act, another wonderful name. And there was a guy from Georgia, I think his name was Woodall, who kept talking about balanced regulation. And I swear, if I were back in college doing my normal drinking game, balanced would have been the drunk word, because he must have said it 1,000 times. And I guess my question is when they look at balanced regulation, what's the balance? I mean, is it my health versus their profit? Is that the balance that they're looking for?
Well, what happens under the Regulatory Accountability Act is it's not about balance at all. It's instead truly about just looking for the absolute cheapest alternative. And they're doing it in a pretty dangerous and disingenuous way. Because what they have done is they've picked up a standard. It's something called the least burdensome alternative standard.
Like our trade policies.
Exactly. And it's a code word that's actually taken out of a statute that exists right now. It's a statute under which the Environmental Protection Agency is supposed to be able to regulate toxic chemicals like asbestos. Everybody knows that asbestos is terrible for us. The Surgeon General has said that there's no safe level of exposure. But because of the way that one law is written, the EPA hasn't been able to regulate asbestos because they could always do something that's a little different. And industry has masterfully used the court system to stop the EPA from ever issuing a regulation. So if you want a product that's free of asbestos, you can't buy something that's made in the USA and know that that's true. You'd have to buy something that was made in Japan or made in somewhere in Europe.
Absolutely amazing.
Yeah, it really is. And I just don't know, Rick, how you would take a standard that has worked like that, that has paralyzed the government, that one corporate CEO said, your kid has a better chance of being a Major League Baseball player than the EPA does of ever regulating a chemical under this law.
Now, I guess the phrase, think regulations are expensive, try cancer, comes to mind.
Yeah. And I don't see how you look at a system under that one law that has broken so badly and left so many people so unsafe. There are 22,000 known or strongly suspected carcinogens. 5 of them are strongly regulated under TSCA right now.
Wow.
So they've taken a look at that and they've said, you know, that looks like a good idea to handle all the rest of government policy. That's pretty amazing.
That is amazing. But, I mean, at some point, aren't we setting business up to fail? I mean, because they're going to go down this path. If you're telling them this is the rules, these are the rules of the game, that's what they're going to do, and they're going to end up harming people, and they're going to probably end up being sued. And this just sounds like a dumb idea to me all across the board.
I would have to agree. I think that we need a system under which agencies are allowed to rely on the best available evidence, and they're allowed to weigh the concerns that should matter most to them. I mean, I think it's clear that a standard that's needed to regulate worker safety having to do with health exposure or heat exposure isn't the same kind of things you should consider when you're trying to figure out how long a credit card company has to give somebody to pay their bill. But under the Regulatory Accountability Act, you'd have this one-size-fits-all set of considerations and set of standards. And it really does just make everything worse. It puts everyone at risk now, and it puts our economy at risk in the future.
As a regulatory policy analyst, as you're looking at these things, I keep hearing this frame that regulations are just too burdensome. And I've been asking small business friends of mine, is it the regulations that are keeping you from growing? Is it regulation that's killing you? And their response is basically no. So I guess my question is, are these regulations that we have now too burdensome for small businesses, or are we somewhere just about right? What could we be doing differently? That kind of thing.
Yep. you're not the only one who's asking small businesses that question. There have been a series of surveys that have come out, and in every one, small businesses are identifying regulations as not the primary problem. The big problem that small businesses face is the problem that everybody faces. It's there's a lack of demand in the economy today. Yep. So if we could get the economy moving, that's going to help the small businesses again.
But on the regulatory front, mm-hmm. I mean, are we in a place, in your opinion, where things are just about right? Should we be regulating a little bit more? I look at the financial sector. I'd sure like to be regulating them an awful lot more.
Yeah, absolutely. There are places that really do need a lot more regulation. There are places that we have laws that everybody thinks has taken effect. And the banks are a really good example of that haven't been fully implemented. The regulatory policy is kind of the second half. Everyone thinks of the legislative battle, but it's not until the regulations actually come into effect that the law is fully implemented and is able to do what Congress originally intended it to do.
And they should call it the Lobbyist Employment Act, the way I'm looking at it.
Just about. It's an interesting thing they've done. They have set up the Regulatory Accountability Act in a way that lobbyists would be able to shut down and add more layers of process, and they can even do it by dragging the entire process into court and getting a judge involved. But what they've done is cut off the opposite side so that there's no way for people who are public interest advocates, their labor union leaders, their, you know, just any sort of environmental leader or other groups like that, there's no ability for them to say, it's time to move faster, this is an emergency, people are dying.
Well, consumer, worker, beware.
Absolutely.
Trouble. Jessica Randall, I appreciate the time. Thank you so much. Regulatory policy analyst at OMB Watch, ombwatch.org, their website. We got a link at thericksmithshow.com. Just click on Jessica's name. Thank you again.
Thanks so much, Rick. Good night.
Good night. We're going to take a quick break. Right back, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Yellow water, is that what we want to be drinking? Back after this.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Perhaps you're part of Wall Street's richest 1%. Yet, deep in the deepest part of your hedge fund heart, you secretly support the We Are the 99% people. Taking a big step even further, you might actually desire to join the Occupy Wall Street movement in one of its tent camps to show your solidarity. But, my goodness, there's just no way you can settle into one of those grungy plastic tents that the movement people are in. Well, fret no more, my uber-rich friend, for that's why Neiman Marcus exists. In the nick of time, the luxury retailer has come out with its Christmas book, featuring 171 pages of fabulous gift ideas for the fabulously wealthy. And there it is, on page 6263, in a four-color spread, the Dream Folly Tent. It's an 18-foot diameter yurt that, according to the catalog description, is inspired by the whimsical TV show I Dream of Jeannie. And what a whimsy it is, with an opulent interior that, as Neiman puts it, goes beyond your wildest, most decadent dreams. You'll sink into a bevy of one-of-a-kind, down-filled designer pillows, zone out on the tent's fine textiles in colors selected, quote, to evoke the bubbles of a warm, soothing bath. And be protected from even the darkest of nights by a custom handcrafted crystal chandelier. The catalog assures purchasers that Neiman Marcus can have a dream tent installed on your estate grounds in the blink of an eye. And if the company can deliver in, say, the Hamptons, how hard would it be to set you up in a downtown Occupy encampment? This is Jim Hightower saying, yes, even the wealthiest elites can stand with the people. Then withdraw to their dream tents. Prices start at $75,000. While that's a bit pricey, imagine the solidarity it will build with those protesting the excesses of Wall Street elites.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at HightowerLowdown.org.
Radio of, for, and by, we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
Yeah, and looking at these regulations, I mean, the reality is you got to have rules to any game. I don't care what it is that you're playing. I don't care what it is you're doing. There are rules. And they've got to be across the board. They've got to be sane. They've got to be rational. But they also have to hold people accountable. And you look at this Regulatory Accountability Act. It does nothing. Like she said, it's a way to destroy the regulations. And I look at what she said, the least restrictive barrier. That reminds me of NAFTA and the screw job we got there. So I would suggest you contact your senator, both of them, Toomey and Casey, and say, no, not going to do it. And there's a Democrat who has co-sponsored the sister bill in the Senate. Of course, I don't know that you can consider a Democrat from Arkansas really that much of a Democrat. So there you go. Today is the 10th anniversary of the E word. Enron, what else can you do? The 10th anniversary of the Enron bankruptcy. In August of 2000, the stock was $90.75. A little over a year later, it was 26 cents. I would say that is a meteoric fall. Now, the bigwigs, Ken Lay and Jeffrey Skilling and the rest of them, they got out while the getting was good, while simultaneously telling the idiot doofus workers, oh, keep buying more, because it was $90, it'll go back. Now is a good time to buy. So buy these stocks that I'm selling you, plus keep the ones you had, because it'll go back up. And guess what? All gone. Every bit of it. $2.1 billion. $2.1 billion in pension money up in smoke. And guess what? No PBGC, no bailing them out, none of that. Sorry, brother, you're on your own. So, yeah, hey, good times, right? Good times. But, yeah, I mean, it's beautiful, isn't it? You got to love it. Let's go to the phone lines. How you doing tonight?
Hey, Rick. How you doing, Bob?
I cannot complain. What's the good news?
Well, let me give you a news flash. You ready?
Hit me.
All right. Well, I've only told one other person about this, but I've been involved with Occupy Charleston and, in the bigger sense, Occupy Wall Street. And guess who they're joining forces with?
The Tea Party.
Nope.
Who?
Anonymous.
Oh, okay.
And there's some hacking going on right now. And yes, they've been withholding the Bank of Italy, records that they never released. But, they're going after some high profile people and, individually, and they're going after state governments. They're going after, I mean, seriously, dude, there's fixing to be some stuff that that you're not going to even believe.
Well, I'm a big fan of open, accountable. I'm a big fan of sunshine. Bring it on. I want to see it.
Right. And this is on the order of what happened with over there in Switzerland.
WikiLeaks.
Yeah. You know what I'm talking about,
yep.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, when they went after Credit Suisse and the hidden bank accounts.
Yep.
Yeah.
Good.
Well,
I said, I'm in favor of open, transparent. I'm in favor of sunshine, accountability, all those wonderful buzzwords. I'm in favor of actually doing it.
And by the way, let me ask you something. If you get rich or if you get fat and happy and you're doing it under in behind the scenes and in closed doors and you don't want nobody to know who you are. If people go after you and they actually hack into you, and they bust you, let me ask you something. If you're doing something illegal, whether you're a drug dealer or somebody that runs prostitutes or yada, 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 right?
Or someone who has a mistress for 13
years. Dollars,
right.
Well, let me ask you something. Who's the bad guy here? Is it the guys that expose you, or is it what you're doing?
It's what you're doing.
Correct. And that's why Herman Cain's going down. And by the way, Newt Gingrich, as somebody that's known him all his life, I got news for you. that boy ain't gonna make it, and there's a reason he ain't gonna make it, because he's a piece of crap.
Well, we knew that, but you know what? So does everybody else. But the right, and like they say, what is it they say about it floating? There you go. It has floated to the top.
And you know what the funny part is?
Hit me.
This crap always floats on the top. And that's what's happening here. And when it's exposed, it sinks in a hurry. And you know what? I'm telling you right now, mark my words, you watch. After the first of this year, I'm telling you, Anonymous is on this. And I'm telling you that they've hooked up with us. And we're fixing to bust a whole bunch of people.
Good. Good, good, good. You know, I love to hear direct action. I love to hear people involved. Ike, good on you, brother.
All right, brother.
I appreciate it. In fact, not only is it that bad, I look at former Missouri Senator Republican John Danforth, who was also an ambassador to the UN under George W. Bush, who was interviewed recently and said, you know, I've been watching some of these Republican debates, and they're just terrible, he said. He said, it's embarrassing for me as a Republican to watch this stuff. He goes on to say what have been the applause lines in these debates. He says, well, a statement that a governor in Texas is responsible for killing 234 people on death row, or we favor torture, or that we created a fence on the Mexican border that electrocutes people when they try and cross it, or when people show up to the emergency room at hospitals and they're not insured, don't treat them. He says, and that, I mean, these are the big applause lines. People just hoop and holler when they hear it. And he says, you know, that doesn't have anything to do with the Republican Party that I was a part of. This is John Danforth, a former Republican senator from Missouri. And he's going, look, this is just totally different. And all of these people who are saying this, you know, and that, claiming, you know, they're for all this stuff. And he says they're sort of ostensibly saying, oh, we're very religious people, and we're really very pious Christian people. He said they were for torture, they were for electrocution of people along the border, and all of that, he says, that doesn't have anything to do with and is contrary to the Christianity that I understand. And, you know, I got to be honest with you, John, I've been saying that for years now.
And if you know anything about his record, Rick, he was pretty much a mainstream conservative. On some issues, he was a moderate, but he was pretty much a mainstream conservative, and he's appalled. What does that tell you about the party?
But here's the thing, and this is what I've been saying for the longest time. The Republican Party, just stop pretending. Understand your party's been hijacked. It's been hijacked by the extremists. It's been hijacked by the billionaire class. It's been hijacked by the people who don't give a rat's behind about this country. They care about themselves. And, you know, I was talking to a friend who happens to be a lobbyist, and he was saying, you know, you're going to start seeing people just, you know, they're going to come in, they're going to get what they want, and they're going to leave. You're not going to see statesmen anymore. You're going to see people who, what's in it for me, and out the door. And is that what our government is supposed to be? So all those people, I want term limits. What term limits turns into, understand. It turns into somebody going, I got 4 or 6 or 8 years to make as many contacts, to make as much money, to secure myself as best as I can. That's what you're saying to them. And I have a real problem with that. And you look at the Gingriches of the world, and, you know, he's right. It floats, man. It floats. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Jim Savage, president of the United Steelworkers 10-1, about what's going on there in Philadelphia as they're closing refineries. It's just nuts. Back after this.
Right. Just make us be brave. Make us play nice. Let us be together tonight.
Thought-provoking, intelligent conversation with a heart. The voice of the working class, Rick Smith. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Hi, I'm Bob Snyder, president of Teamsters Local 776 here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. For more than 100 years, Teamsters have been standing together to create a better tomorrow. We Teamster members are your friends and neighbors. Teamsters move goods across the nation, take care of seniors, serve and protect our community, and so much more. We are hardworking, dedicated professional workers, united to make our lives, our communities, and our nation stronger. If you want to be part of the team, join the Teamsters for a better tomorrow. Contact us at 1-800-692-6280. That's 1-800-692-6280. Or visit our website at TeamstersLocal776.org. We are people helping people.
Dear John Bank, I am so sorry it has to be this way, but there's just no choice. I wish circumstances were different, but I can't hide my feelings any longer. I'm in love with another, and you just don't compare. I got tired of you taking advantage of me, charging me higher and higher fees, and raising rates behind my back. I did love you so, but now we have to break up. It's hard, but the right thing for me. I'm with PSECU now, and this credit union treats me right. That's all I ever asked for, to be somewhere I belong.
If you're ready to break up with your bank and take back what's yours, we're ready to help. Call, click, or come in. You can join. Go to PSECU.com/befree and see where you belong.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration. Equal opportunity lender.
I will oppose the Colombia Free Trade Agreement. I want Congress to pass a set of trade deals. Send a message to Congress to come to an agreement on trade deals.
They're selling make-believe and we don't buy that here. Cause in the real world they're shutting Detroit down.
Well, you know, it's not just Detroit. You know, I see it's being reported that in Philadelphia, the Philly Inquirer reported Sunoco Incorporated blaming deteriorating market conditions. They're going to be shutting down immediately the historic Marcus Hook refinery months ahead of their 2012 deadline. And, you know, you look at that report that I talked about earlier, that this country is a net exporter of refined products, of petroleum products, gasoline, diesel, heating oil. We are a net exporter. And you put that in with the frame that the Republicans keep talking about. We need to drill more. We need to produce here more at home. We're doing that. And we're shipping it somewhere else so that these big multinational global corporations can profit from it. And they don't care about this country. They don't care about Pennsylvania or Ohio. They don't care. They care about the almighty dollar. And you look at what's going on down in Philly. That's exactly it. And the Republicans are whining and complaining. We can't build a new refinery. They're closing three of them. So I've asked Jim Savage, president of the United Steelworkers Local 10-1, to come talk to us about what's going on there. Jim, thanks for taking time for me.
Hey, Rick, how you doing, bro?
I'm good. I'm looking at this, and it makes no sense to me. For years, I heard Republicans screaming, we can't build a refinery in the U.S. because of the onerous regulations. Yet I see this. They're closing three of them.
Well, you know, you're asking Republicans to make sense. There's your first problem.
Well, there is that.
Let's face it. Let's 20 years ago, 25 years ago, there were 300 and something refineries operating in the United States. Today, there's less than 120, or around 120. You know, ConocoPhillips and Trainer, which is right next door to Sunoco and Marcus Hook, shut down, stopped making product two months ago. Sunoco made their announcement the day after Labor Day on the Philadelphia Marcus Hook refineries. You know, looking for a buyer, we'll shut it down by July. And then yesterday, you know, pulls a rug out from under everybody in Marcus Hook and they're going to start shutting that down immediately. We are giving up. Yeah, people talk about energy independence. People talk about you could drill, baby, drill till the cows come home. If you can't refine it,
right,
you know, what are you going to do?
Yeah, I mean, it makes almost from a national security perspective because, you know, I think the mutual agreement between everybody, both parties, independents, everybody, is that if you're not energy independent, if you don't have the ability to produce and make your own energy, you're going to be subservient. So why would we be doing what they're doing in Philadelphia and really across the nation? We are a net exporter of energy. It makes no sense to me, especially when you look at gas prices, $3.33 a gallon.
Yeah, and you know, Sunoco made the announcement yesterday, and within a day, gasoline futures in New York for all the people that play that, you know, that money way,
play the game,
like 4% or whatever, you know. So, and the meeting that we had in Philadelphia, yesterday, right after the announcement, you know, I asked, you know, how we're taking 40,000 barrels. Sunoco is taking 40,000 barrels a day of home heating oil out of the Northeast market in December, right? Wrap your head around that. You know how volatile that market is already, right?
Yep. This is beautiful.
Every other year, or almost every year, or at least every other year, we have supply disruptions, we have price spikes, whatever. You know, LIHEAP is a huge issue. You know, there are people in Washington who only exist, you know, because they are such strong supporters of home heating oil issues. Sunoco's going to pull 40,000 barrels a day out of the market. And I asked the question, you know, what's the impact of that? And you know what the answer was? Well, we hope that that'll make the margin on that product better. That means
profit.
They want the price to go up.
Yep.
They intend for the price to go up. You know, people on fixed incomes, people, the Northeast, United States, uses something like 70 or 75% of all the home heating oil in the United States. This region is very dependent on home heating oil. And we're just giving up. Like you said, you know, our independence, our national security, our people could literally freeze to death in their homes.
You know, and I listen to that, and you know, the reality is, you know, I think everybody sees the transparency in that. The whole supply and demand thing. If we can cut demand, we can cut the amount of supply that's in the market. We can gouge their eyes out because the governments are, the Pennsylvania and Massachusetts and the federal government's not going to let a 90-year-old woman freeze to death in her house. They're going to pay the LIHEAP money, or they're going to find it from somewhere. They're not going to let old people freeze to death. And it's gouging. It's pure and simple.
I don't know if I agree with you with this Congress we have right now. I think they would let people freeze to death in their homes. I really do.
You know, I really
think that we've jumped the shark that much that
boy, I sure hope
people can freeze to death in their homes, and you'll still have somebody down there.
Jim, I sure hope they're not that soulless. But I guess I can't argue to the opposite on that as well, because
they haven't shown the ability not to be.
Yeah, I got to give them at least that much credit up front. But let's not have to see this. Let me ask you on the local level, because this is a lot of jobs. What's this going to mean to the local economy? What's going to mean to local property owners? How is this going to affect your region?
Yeah, you know, I work in the Philadelphia Refinery, and fortunately, you know, we're still running. You know, we expect to be the next, obviously we're the next domino to fall, right? But I grew up here right within a couple miles of Marcus Hook Refinery. I live in Trainer, which is where the ConocoPhillips Refinery is. You know, I literally live a half a mile from that refinery. These are working class boroughs that, you know, that they're just working class neighborhoods. It's something like the Trainer budget and the Marcus Hook budget of the boroughs. Those refineries are something like 40, 45, close to 50% of their entire budget.
Wow.
You know, I talked to the mayor of Marcus Hook, you know, he expects that town to be a ghost town if Sunoco shuts down. And that was before Sunoco's announcement yesterday, obviously. That was, you know, a month or so ago when I was speaking to him. My family lives in this region because my grandfather, 70, 80 years ago, came here for a job in the Marcus Hook Refinery.
Which you know, that refinery
is the reason I exist in this neighborhood, right?
Right. And that refinery, as I understand, has been there 110 years.
That refinery's been there 110 years. The Trainer refinery's been there for 70-something years. The Philadelphia refinery is the oldest operating refinery in the world. you know, it's been there since 1887 or something like that. I mean, these are viable, and you know, we're talking about the property, right? The equipment obviously isn't that old, right?
Right.
These are viable facilities, you know, world-class workforce, good middle-class wage jobs that support the communities. We don't get our paycheck and go home buried in the backyard. We come out and we spend it in our community. We pay property taxes. We pay whatever, right? You, I don't have to explain to you how the economy works.
Yeah, I mean you're gonna support local businesses. But from what I'm hearing, what's gonna happen? You're gonna end up seeing check cashing places and you know liquor stores and I guess that's probably a good thing since we're privatizing the state wine and spirit shops. There'll be a liquor store on every corner.
There'll be a liquor store in every corner and somebody to rob it. Right? Yeah, this is going to be devastating to the southeast region of Pennsylvania.
Is it possible
from
to stop
Philadelphia
this?
Down to the Delaware border, I'm telling you it's going to be devastating. Everybody around here, everybody either has a family member or knows somebody that works in one of these refineries.
Is it possible to stop it? Is it possible to change this? Are there any prospective buyers, or is that all just a shell game?
Sunoco says that there are interested parties. Okay, my third grade teacher told me that figures lie when liars do the figuring.
Right,
and you know that's the way we're trying to approach this. We don't know what you know. They don't pump to us much. And when they do, you don't know what to believe, right? We are very concerned that Sunoco and Conoco, their intention from the beginning was to do this public theater thing about we're trying to sell these refineries, but actually they're just going to turn them into terminals so that they can bring foreign products across our docks, through our pipelines, to their tanks. And, you know,
basically outsource your job.
Put it in a tank with a Sunoco label on it and then sell it at Sunoco station as Sunoco gas.
So more outsourcing only here.
Scary
stuff.
Here's something for you, Rick. Look it up. I'll send you the link. Sunoco shut down a refinery in New Jersey 2 years ago, a non-union refinery in Westville, New Jersey. It's called the Eagle Point Refinery. They are right now in the process of selling all the refinery equipment to an Indian company in India. They're gonna dismantle that refinery, put it on barges, get it down the river, put it on ships, ship it to India, reassemble it, and make gasoline, and then bring that product in here, right? And we got to compete now against imports with the being made by the equipment that American workers operated and maintained.
That's the American way.
That's how, I mean, they're literally sticking their finger in our
eye. Well, I guess it's the American business way. Screw the worker and profit where you can. Personally, I'm of the mindset that our federal government should be looking into taking over those refineries and making sure that we have the capacity that you need in this area, especially given the fact, as you said, 70% of the home heating oil goes to that region. Just mind-blowing. Jim,
If you can't make the argument now to nationalize this industry, you never can.
Yeah, good point. Jim Savage, president of the United Steelworkers, Local 10-1. I wish you guys the best, and I want to, as this goes down the road, please come back and tell us what's going on.
Hey, Rick, keep up the good work, man. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much. Let's take a quick break right back. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
My name is Joanna, and my job is to protect children, to help them live in safe and stable families. I work for you, the taxpayers in Children and Youth Services. Every day, I help children and families in crisis. Many parents have lost their jobs, making it harder to keep a roof overhead, food on the table, and stress under control. My caseloads are huge, and waiting lists for critical services are too long. Yet I know the safety of these children depends on me. Even in tough economic times, legislators must fund these vital programs. Because if we don't help these kids now, the cost to them and to us will be much higher later on. Children don't only depend on me doing my job, they're counting on you to care about their safety. Contact your state legislators today. Demand that they invest in programs that prevent and treat child abuse. Because a child in pain shouldn't have to wait.
Brought to you by SEIU Local 668. Visit our website at SEIU668.org and join our Human Services campaign.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make it, we make it happen.
Don't really care about the economy. Don't care much about democracy. I'm a member of the GOP, trying to form a plutocracy. But if I can just bamboozle you, and you'll share my narrow point of view, what a wonderful world this would be.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. You got a question, comment, something on your mind, Rick at thericksmithshow.com, the best place to email me. And, you know, you look at all this energy stuff and the fact that we're a net exporter of energy, the fact that you've got people who are trying to kill the renewable energy industry, and now this. This idea that we can shut down our refining capacity. When just a couple years ago, if you remember the debates, the Republicans were just all a Twitter about, oh, well, we can't possibly build another refinery, even though there were, you know, there were permits to build several more across the country. And now here we are, just a couple years later, closing three major ones. It just doesn't make an awful lot of sense to me. Anyway, let's go to the phone lines. I've got Teresa on line one. Teresa, thanks for taking time for me.
Teresa,
hello. Hi, how are you tonight?
I'm good.
I understand you're an employee of one of these refineries?
I'm an employee of ConocoPhillips. That's correct.
How long have you been working for them?
12 years.
Wow. What's going to happen once they decide to shut this thing down?
Well, the American dream dies. Along with American tradition, our American dream dies. There's no hope. There's no jobs out there anymore.
So
this is top 25% of jobs out there, and there's nothing to be had. I have to move. I have to go to another state, another area, to just find something that's equal to what I'm doing today.
And that cannot be good for the family.
That's correct. All right. And you gotta uproot, you gotta relocate, you gotta hope where you're going is gonna be stable and continue with what your knowledge is that you learn, that you're, again, your American dream.
Yeah, and this is something I'm sure you spent a lot of time learning to do, and because it's not just a job anybody can walk right into.
That's correct. Nobody can come in and start a refinery or even bring down a refinery. It's nothing that it looks like that they want to do today. Looks like they want to continue with natural gas and kill Mother Nature, and she has a way of going about being tampered with.
Right.
She don't want to be tampered with.
But you know, I look
creating
at this
a lot of earthquakes and stuff like that, just because natural gas isn't something that you just go in and tamper with.
And there've been studies done where they've shown where, you know, going and doing this fracking and doing this high pressure injection has caused some low level earthquakes and caused problems.
That's right.
And it just makes common sense. But
right.
You know, I'm looking at this fact that, again, you know, the Republicans for years were complaining we can't build new refineries, and it just doesn't make any sense to me. We're closing three really big ones at a time when we need every single job. For me, I think at some point you gotta think about nationalizing part of this.
That's right. Good luck with going on a trip on a holiday with the jet fuel and home heating oil.
So what
That's
are you
crazy.
What are you guys doing to get the word out to make sure that people know this is coming? Maybe we can get some action in Washington, maybe some action here in Harrisburg. What are you guys working on?
Other than doing rallies and petitioning at our eateries and churches and anywhere we can, we've been going to Harrisburg and talking to our senators and representatives and anybody like that just to give us a voice.
Well, I wish you nothing but the best. You've got a friend here at the Rick Smith Show, and we're going to keep our eye on this and try and do everything we can do to help get these politicians to at least do something. At least something.
Right.
I appreciate your time, Teresa. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
You know, you listen to that story, and I got to be honest, it's heartbreaking. I mean, you know, somebody who's, you know, spent their life working to try and, you know, get a job. Now you've got that piece of the American dream. You got a job. You think it's going to be stable. It's been there 110 years. Then you get these greedy corporations who think, wow, you know, I can make an extra penny across the pond. We can ship that stuff back in here. Limit the supply, gouge the consumer, and pocket the profit. I mean, that's the model, isn't it?
And his story of these greedy companies, you know, shutting down their operations here, actually taking, just as the Chinese did, Rick, I remember you telling stories of the Chinese came in here, actually literally put in boxes the equipment that the American company and the American workers used to manufacture some product, took it back to China, resurrected it in China, made the same product, brought the finished product back to the United States. That's exactly what the oil companies are doing. Can you imagine that? I mean, how perverse. I mean, you wonder, Rick, what it's going to take for the American people just to revolt. I mean, it is so immoral. I mean, when do we say enough is enough?
But here's the thing. I don't blame the companies.
They're getting away with it.
Yeah, we're letting them do it. I mean, look, if there's a rule that I can exploit, gonna do it. If that's the game, they're playing by our rules, and we have given too soft a rules.
They are, Rick, but by the same token, they're using the perverse effect of money on. Let's be honest. Big business has bought Congress in too many important issues, and too many key and key Democrats too. I mean, we keep saying it, but it is so true. You can't just say the Republicans, although the Republicans have larger numbers, their key Democrats have been bought and sold by big business, no question about it.
Which is why we absolutely need publicly financed elections.
Absolutely,
no question about that.
And how do you do that unless we change? I can guarantee you this, Rick. The makeup of Congress now, you can forget about even sniffing it. What you're going to have to do is get the crazies out. This election, 2012, again, we keep saying this election is the most important. Well, you know what? In 2012, this is the most important election you will ever vote in.
And the sad thing is all these, I think 1,000 people are going to lose their jobs. And if you look at the new study that just came out from the National Bureau of Economic Research, they found that one percentage point increase in state unemployment is associated with a 1.67% reduction in the probability of men having health insurance. They also, they said this effect is the strongest among college-educated white and older men, according to the research. Similarly, the 1 percentage point increase in the unemployment rate is associated with a 1.37 percentage point higher probability that a child is covered by public health insurance. And they're estimating that 9.3 million adults lost insurance simply because of the recession of 2007 to 2009. And again, you know, you've got Rick Santorum out there saying, well, we should bring those pre-existing conditions back, and people with pre-existing conditions, they should pay more. They should pay absolutely more. And, you know, you bring up the idea of publicly financed elections. Well, guess what our Republican friends did? This afternoon, our friends, they ended the $3 checkoff on the tax return. You know that $3 you could check off to fund money to the presidential campaigns?
Mm-hmm.
No more. They're not doing it anymore. The measure was backed basically by Republicans, 235 to 190, ending the system that is going to give money to presidential candidates. Now they're saying that, well, they'll put it into something else. But it's not going to go for that. And you look at what's going on. The Bloomberg News just did some number crunching. And they've come up with this GOP primary so far has been the cheapest in at least a decade. And you go, well, why is that? Why is it that the candidates haven't spent as much money? Well, first, I don't know that they've got as much money. And the reason they don't have as much money is because of Citizens United, who's given this power to all of these outside groups.
Mm-hmm.
People like American Crossroads and Crossroads GPS, the Karl Rove group. They've spent $20 million alone. Now, the outside groups together, all of them, this is what the Hill is saying, spent $35 million to influence the 2012 election. Karl Rove's group spent $20 alone. Think about that. I mean, it's mind blowing. So far in this GOP primary, the top nine major candidates have spent a combined $53 million. Compare that to 4 years ago, it was $132 million. The Democratic primary where Kerry won was $58 million. We're spending a lot of money, but not as much. And you know why I think? How many debates have we had? I mean, if you really, truly, and I've talked about this for some time, if you want publicly financed elections, if you want open, accountable elections, do what the Republicans have been doing. I'm in favor of major, many, many, many debates. Have a debate a week so people get to know the candidates and they don't have to buy time. And you know what? The big media conglomerates, they're not loading up on their pockets.
Well, here's a suggestion, Rick. I don't know that we'll ever take up the British system. However, my point is this. The length of the campaigns for president are far too long. I mean, I think we ought to look at narrowing that window. And when you're talking about length of time, you're talking about more money and more money. Oh, by the way, Karl Rove has said publicly, you want to talk about astounding amounts. He anticipates spending $420 million in 2012. That is an astounding amount of money. And he's just, I think he just, last year, the year before, he formed his PAC. He hasn't been around long. That is an amazing amount just from one PAC.
And one set of voices. And that's the problem with what's going on. I personally believe that it should be completely federally funded. You shouldn't be able to go above and beyond the federal funding. And you should be able to only take small amounts of, no more than $100. So we take the big money out of it, but thanks to Citizens United, and which is, why this move to amend group, I'm excited. Maybe you get a movement across this country of people saying, we should be funding our own elections, not leaving it up to the millionaires and billionaires. Because where do you think these people have to go? They got to go begging to the same people that they're supposed to be regulating. You look at our business climate. You know why regulations are so pathetic? Because you've got these politicians who've got to go with their hand out to say, "Oh, please, can I have $10,000 or $20,000?" And they'll go, "We'll give it to you if you vote, if you listen to our argument for this regulation." And then, by doing away with that regulation, they make millions of dollars. It's a good investment. I wish I could take every penny I have and flush it through that system to where I give out a couple of pennies and I get a couple $100 back. Be a great way to go about it. But again, federally funded elections, I think, are the right way to go. Dollars are not votes. Should not be that way. And I don't care what you say. Dollars, not free speech. Not at all. Anyway, let's take a quick break right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Smith Show, changing America for the better. The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to Wind Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. The Teamsters Union has again refused to cross picket lines at U.S. food distribution facilities in Swedesboro and Bridgeport, New Jersey. The Teamsters say locals 1414 in Philadelphia and 676 in Collingswood, New Jersey, set up the sympathy picket lines. It's in support of an unfair labor practice strike by maintenance workers at U.S. Foods Streeter, Illinois location. The Teamsters say sympathy picket lines have sprung up at 12 U.S. food facilities across the country. Some 2,000 Teamsters have refused to cross the picket lines in 9 states. A rail strike could happen by December 6th unless 3 rail unions are able to reach agreement with America's major freight railroads. The Brotherhood of Locomotive Engineers and Trainmen and the American Train Dispatchers refused to agree to another extension on contract talks. The talks are overseen by a special presidential board. If no contract agreements are reached by the end of a mandated cooling-off period, December 6th, a strike is possible. Americans United for Change is out with a new web video accusing Republicans of being willing to raise taxes on 160 million middle-class Americans. The issue is the payroll tax break that expires December 31st. Republicans appear willing to hold that working family tax break hostage to their budget-cutting demands, even as the GOP protects millionaires and billionaires from tax increases. Federal workers could be looking at 5 years without a pay raise if Republicans in the Senate succeed in extending a pay freeze through 2015. Jesse Russell reports.
The extension of the pay freeze and a plan to slash the federal workforce by 10% is being proposed by the GOP to cover the cost of extending a payroll tax cut. President Barack Obama, who is seeking the payroll tax cut extension, would like to cover the cost with a 3.25% surtax on income exceeding $1 million. The Republicans are opposed to such a surtax because it would raise taxes on millionaires. If the payroll tax cut is not extended, working Americans will see a tax increase of 2%. However, the Republican plan doesn't put everything on the backs of federal workers and middle-class Americans. Under their plan, the country's highest earners would be required to pay the full cost of Medicare premiums, and they would no longer be qualified for unemployment benefits.
This is what democracy looks like, Wisconsin's Worker Uprising, a one-hour radio documentary produced by Workers Independent News in conjunction with WORT. Get your copy today at laborradio.org. This newscast made possible in part through underwriting from the AFL-CIO. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Things are kind of upside down. Choke a few from water, turn around.
Back to the Rick Smith Show. I wanted that. This just in. Embargoed report from the Borowitz Report. Embargoed letter from Herman Cain. Evidently, this is the farewell letter he will deliver on Saturday. He says, "Dear friends." And when I say friends, I mean in the normal way, not someone I've been sleeping with for 13 years. Unless, of course, I have been sleeping with you for 13 years. In that case, I do mean it that way. The embargoed letter said, "It is with a heavy heart that I have decided to end my inspirational quest for the White House. After much reassessing and reconsidering, I have decided to spend more time being screamed at by my wife. And by more time, I mean 24 hours a day, stopping only for bathroom breaks. But before I go, let me share with you my final thoughts on my campaign. After months of crisscrossing this great land of ours and participating in over 300 televised debates, I am being disqualified because of an extramarital affair. And that raises the following question. Are you freaking kidding me? I mean, let's get real here. I never heard of Libya. I don't know whether that CNN dude's name was Wolf or Blitz. And my only training for running for the number one nation's job in the world was to run the number 8 pizza chain. Yet none of that, I repeat, none of that disqualifies me. In fact, I was the freaking front runner. as long as I kept my 999 in my pants. I have no idea what I meant by that. I just like saying 999. But here's the part that really kills me, Herman writes in the embargoed letter. You're kicking me to the curb because I was messing around. And instead you're going with Newt Gingrich? I repeat, are you freaking kidding me? He says, oh, I know. I know. I know you're saying you love Newt because he's an intellectual. Well, Newt Gingrich is the intellectual of the Republican field in the way that Mo was the intellectual of the Three Stooges. And that leads me to my final point. You disgust me, America. Right now, if I had my way, I'd up and move to another country. I really truly would, he says. Only I don't know where any of them are, and my wife won't let me leave the house. Goodbye forever, Herman Cain. Oh, that's, I hope he gives that. I hope he gives that one. I hope that's an accurate, embargoed letter from the campaign. I find it interesting, though, that Herman says his wife didn't know Ginger like she would. Yeah, I mean, yeah, here in this country, they were bridge partners together. So I guess Saturday's the big day. Are we supposed to get an announcement Saturday from Cain?
Well, I since you brought it up, just tonight, the head man over at Politico, which, you know, we use quite frequently, was on national TV. He claims that Herman is very seriously considering dropping out. However, the people who are working with him on the committee are fiercely trying to persuade him not to do it. There's some people who believe he might wait till January.
I'm one of them.
To qualify for the matching funds. But let's be honest, at the end of the day, his campaign is done, finished. Stick a fork in him. He's done.
He was on with Sean Hannity, and you gotta love him. You know, he was being asked about it, and he says,
John, do me a favor. Let's not play detective. Here's the deal. I am going to prove that I am going to reestablish my character, okay? We are working on that. My attorney is working on that. We're going to work on that. But I don't want to play detective right now, with all due respect. I'd really rather not to go there anymore with respect to trying to play detective about how do we resolve this. No, we are working on it because I'm going to reestablish my reputation.
Yeah. I'm going to. First he says, well, I'm going to prove. No, wait a minute. That's a bad one. I'm going to reestablish it. I'm going to make sure that I reestablish my character. And I love this quote. He was asked about it again, and he says,
think about it. We've been hit with another one of these accusations that we now have to address to basically prove once again I didn't do some of the things that I've been accused of doing.
So which ones did you do? I mean, if you didn't do some of them, which ones did you do? I think that's the big question. I mean, there are a lot of things that you could say Herman did. I got to be honest, the sexual harassment one, I could easily come up with a justification for that, and we've talked about it. But carrying on a 13-year affair and then lying about it, probably, I don't know how you get around that.
Well, I'll tell you, when you see her, when you see Ginger on TV, she's very believable. And she said, I was, you know, I'm not easily shocked, but I was shocked. She said, look, this wasn't a 13-year romance. It was all about sex. She said, now that's as hard as that is. And, you know, I'm embarrassed for myself and my family, but that's the truth. That's the plain truth.
They were friends with benefits.
That's
and,
right.
And he was paying her.
And for 13 years, that's hard to explain.
But I love his justification.
And I understand he's this wonderful man that's kind-hearted.
He's just giving money to everybody.
And I like this line. Well, my wife understood.
Yeah, she understood, all right. She understands that she doesn't want to live in the poorhouse. So she's going to give the forgiveness and say, okay, but just don't do it again. And, oh, by the way, don't come near me again, but I'm not leaving the big house. I understand that's how it works. Because why didn't he bring her anywhere? Think about how he ran his campaign. First, it was a book tour. He had no ground game. He was just trying to promote himself because he's a master self-promoter. You got to give him credit for that. But you never saw them together. I mean, that tells me something. Well, she's back home keeping down the fort. Yeah, you know, and like they say, you know, while the cat's away, the mice are going to play. Well, little Herman and his little Herman were out playing. No surprise there. Nothing surprising about it.
Well, I believe up until yesterday, And he might not have talked to her personally yet. On the phone he was talking to her, but as of yesterday, he still hadn't talked to her, person to person. You would think that he'd want to get home and talk to her right away.
Yeah, you got to think there's something there. I mean, but hey, good for Herman. I mean, if he gets away with it, you know, because I asked my wife, if you remember the Newt Gingrich one, where Newtie said,
partially driven by how passionately I felt about this country.
Passionately he felt about the country. You know, I asked my wife if she would buy that. Would you buy the, I only did it because I love my country? And she said, well, no. In fact, here's the whole clip.
There's no question that at times in my life, partially driven by how passionately I felt about this country, that I worked far too hard and that things happened in my life that were not appropriate.
And he was working hard, all right. And, you know, the whole love of country, it kind of explains, you know, why all of the women said, he made me wear this flag over my head. I don't understand.
I heard a lot of excuses for adultery, but that's unique. You gotta give the neuter an A for effort.
It happened by accident. I tripped and fell, and it just went in. I don't know.
It just had a wave of patriotism.
Yeah. And he was singing, "Oh, Come Ye All Ye Faithful." And, so there you go.
And all of a sudden, we were having sex.
No, they were loving their country together.
Is that what it was?
That's what it was, man.
And you know that if he winds up the Republican nominee, you know that subject's going to come up. It should be very interesting if he's the Republican nominee.
Again, you can't say anything about him now because it's all out. Everybody knows if they put him out there, they're okay with it. If the Republicans vote for him, they're okay with his past and how it'll go into the future. Because, look, my problem with him is not that he did it. None of us are perfect. My problem is while he was doing it, he was going after Clinton, pointing his finger at him. And he was in the middle of it while going after trying to impeach Clinton for the same exact thing he was doing. That's my problem.
Well, I think it's pretty funny. Kane's probably going to have his campaign destroyed, but yet a man who is a serial offender is going to be the beneficiary of a man having his campaign destroyed because of adultery, and he's a serial adulterer.
We don't know what Herman and Little Herman have been doing. This could be all predicated on there's number 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. Who knows? But Herman's got some explaining to do because Mama's not going to be happy. That simple. Anyway, speaking of Newt Gingrich, Newtie has been, again, one of those statements that he made about Freddie and Fannie, kind of coming back on him, because some people are digging into his past with Freddie Mac. Now, remember, he said, I told him it was insane. They should never do what they're doing. It's just insane. It's nuts. It's crazy. Don't do it. The sky's going to fall. That's what I told them. They didn't listen to me. Well, there's some archived video of the Newtster. In fact, he was, he was all in favor of something called the Government Supported Enterprise Model, GSE. He said, while we need to improve the regulations of the GSE, stop and think about that for a second. We need to improve the regulations of the GSE, the Government Supported Enterprise. Stop and think about that. You've got a Republican Party who's hell-bent on destroying all regulations and getting government out of private industry, and Newtie, in one sentence, has thrown wholehearted support behind both. So not only is he in favor of regulations, he's also in favor of government-supported enterprise. As I was thinking through this today, you get the Republicans who say, well, we need government out of private industry. We need government out of the private market. We need government out of the private sector. Are there any Republicans who can justify something called a public-private partnership? P3s, you know what P3s are. Because you've got a governor here in the state of Pennsylvania, a very Republican governor and a very Republican legislature, who wants our transportation infrastructure and our transportation here in the state of Pennsylvania to be funded by public-private partnerships or something along the model of a GSE, a government-supported enterprise. There's some problems here. Am I missing something? Some problems on ideology, some problems on how you present what you're talking about. Maybe it's just me.
What you're pointing out is some conflict of interests.
So either you're in favor of government-supported enterprise or you're in favor of totally the free market. Because what happens is the righties love to talk about their pure ideology, which, again, is a failure. Just as the left likes to talk about, some of them, about their socialism and that stuff, which is a failure. Where the success happens is where you have some balance, where you have workers with rights, where you have a regulatory system that enforces rules that are fair across the board, protects my health from you raping me for profit. Seems rational to me, and you know, maybe Newt, while he wasn't running for president, maybe he had a good idea.
I believe that's true in quite a few issues. Actually, if you listen to some of Newt's ideas, some of them make sense. Now, to get the Republican endorsement, he's refuted some of them. I think the fact that he's going to have to refute quite a bit of his ideas that make sense in the general is going to come back to bite him. You can guarantee that.
So there you go. Let's take a quick break. 1-888-520. Rick, if you could explain this whole thing with government-supported regulations and private-public partnerships and the mythical hand, I'd love to hear it. 1-888-520, Rick. Back after this.
Yes, it is all about the children, even after they're born. Rick Smith.
Perhaps you're part of Wall Street's richest 1%. Yet, deep in the deepest part of your hedge fund heart, you secretly support the We Are the 99% people. Taking a big step even further, you might actually desire to join the Occupy Wall Street movement in one of its tent camps to show your solidarity. But, my goodness, there's just no way you can settle into one of those grungy plastic tents that the movement people are in. Well, fret no more, my uber-rich friend, for that's why Neiman Marcus exists. In the nick of time, the luxury retailer has come out with its Christmas book, featuring 171 pages of fabulous gift ideas for the fabulously wealthy. And there it is, on page 6263, in a four-color spread, the Dream Folly Tent. It's an 18-foot diameter yurt that, according to the catalog description, is inspired by the whimsical TV show I Dream of Jeannie. And what a whimsy it is, with an opulent interior that, as Neiman puts it, goes beyond your wildest, most decadent dreams. You'll sink into a bevy of one-of-a-kind down-filled designer pillows, zone out on the tent's fine textiles in colors selected, quote, to evoke the bubbles of a warm, soothing bath. And be protected from even the darkest of nights by a custom handcrafted crystal chandelier. The catalog assures purchasers that Neiman Marcus can have a dream tent installed on your estate grounds in the blink of an eye. And if the company can deliver in, say, the Hamptons, how hard would it be to set you up in a downtown Occupy encampment? This is Jim Hightower saying, yes, even the wealthiest elites can stand with the people. Then withdraw to their dream tents. Prices start at $75,000. While that's a bit pricey, imagine the solidarity it will build with those protesting the excesses of Wall Street elites.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at HightowerLowdown.org.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for the Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can, and we will, rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
where family values are more than slogans. The Rick Smith Show.
I'm on a Mexican radio. I'm on a Mexican radio.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. If you missed any portion of the program, ricksmithshow.com, best place to get it. Download the podcast. If you missed and you have a smartphone, download the Stitcher app, and you can take the program on the go. I got an email during the break from Andy. He says, we're doing the fracking here because the Europeans won't let it be done there. Evidently, he claims it's banned in France, and they're looking for a fracking moratorium in the UK. He points to a Financial Times article today that said job creation at the center of debate on fracking. It goes over overwhelmingly the majority of 800 attendees to the Tribeca Performing Arts Center want an outright ban on fracking. Bottom line, he says, from an economic consultant, the economic benefits had been exaggerated and the costs to society underestimated by the industry. And he points to some quick fodder for the minor earthquakes that have been blamed on it across northern England. And you know, you can go to Arkansas here, you can go to Ohio, you can go to Colorado. There's a lot of examples of where we've been pumping things underground and it's caused some earthquake activity. So this is what we've got in our future, folks. Good times ahead for all. I haven't really talked about this. The Teamsters have been, Teamster workers in New York have been locked out. When you think opulence, when you think the investor class, when you think the wealth class, you think Christie's, auction house, right? And you think Sotheby's. Evidently, Sotheby's, this big auction house where they auction off millions of dollars worth of things. In fact, last year, they raked in a record profit of $680 million. Well, they've locked their employees out. Throughout these 43 hardworking folks who were negotiating in good faith, their CEO, a guy named Bill Repecht, said, you know what? Out the door. There's the door, God bless you, has held them out on the street for over 4 months. Well, some workers went to this board, the Hudson River Park Trust. And there's the woman who's the chairwoman. Her name is Diane Taylor. Little inside information on Diane. Diane is the main squeeze of one authoritarian mayor, Michael Bloomberg. So she's got this nice cushy gig sitting on this board, and it's one of these things I can't even really, I don't think me telling you what she said plays enough justice. I cannot absolutely believe that these words came out of this woman's mouth, the arrogance. But this is how the investor class sees us. This is how the wealth class sees the working people of this country, and anything that we ask for, being turned, listen to her.
I have one thing to say to you. I've had one conversation with Bill Rupert about this, and I told him that if he accedes to any of your demands, I will resign from the board. That's all I have to say.
What's up?
If the CEO accedes to any of your demands, anything, one thing, she threatens to resign. How arrogant, how pompous can you possibly be? Now, you're talking about a company made $680 million pure profit. And they want their workers to pay more for their health care and take less wages and have less benefits, work longer hours. Why? Because they want $681 million next year. It's that simple. Can you believe that, Jake? I mean, the arrogance.
We see it all over the country.
But to have the stones to... Right to your face. You will get nothing, and I will make sure you get nothing, and I'm working behind the scenes to make sure you get nothing.
And she is well-heeled. She's well, obviously well-connected, and she feels safe doing it. And shame on her.
I mean, I you know, really? Really?
It'll be interesting to see if Cuomo does anything. Don't count on it.
I'm not holding my breath. You know, again, you know, I go back to that statistic someone threw at me not too long ago. that like 79% of the money that Republicans get come from Wall Street, but 72% of the money that goes to Democrats comes from Wall Street as well. So all of this money is pouring into the parties, pouring into these politicians. Where? From people like her. That's what we're up against, folks. So, you know, I've got friends who, well, I never would want to join a union. I would never want to do that. It's one thing to not want to be part of it. It's another thing to deny me or Jake or anybody else from standing up and fighting for all of us. And I look at these 43 people who they've been thrown to the curb. There are no strikes anymore, Jake. People don't go on strike. People get locked out. They're using the labor laws against working people. And they complain about the few minor laws that are there. That's what blows my mind. Absolutely blows my mind, the temerity. And I look at this idiot in Wisconsin, who, again, you know, there's part of me that just thinks he's trolling everybody. He figures he's out on the way out the door, might as well make a couple of headlines, might as well, you know, impress the upper ups. He is now saying that he's going to charge people for protesting. If you come to the Capitol, there's more than four of you, you have to get a permit 72 hours in advance, and it's going to cost you $50 an hour.
And I don't know how that would stand a test of a court case.
I don't either, but, you know, the gall of it all.
No, you might be right. I think he has aspirations, and you can bet, and we've seen this literally 1,000 times, you know, the money people, the Republican side, they take care of their own. They will take care of this man, you can bet.
So December 16th is the first day that this will go into effect. It'll be phased in on the 16th. It took effect on Thursday. So maybe go Occupy. Maybe that's what needs to happen. And I just don't understand how you can put a price tag on the First Amendment. I'm not quite getting that. But if you remember, now when we were in Wisconsin during the occupation, there is no way that $7.5 million of damage were done to that building during that time. There is just no way. And if I were the people who made that painter's tape, because they use that painter's tape everywhere, if I were those people, I'd sue Scott Walker. Because they're claiming that their tape is crap and that their tape caused a whole bunch of damage. Because they had taped up all those signs with that painter's tape, which is supposed to leave no residue, supposed to leave no marks behind, and didn't. In fact, I saw those kids on their hands and knees scrubbing the floor. If anything, the state should have been paying them to clean the place up because it was probably cleaner while they were occupying than it is today.
When you think back of what happened, and when you're going through it, you don't really say, oh, boy, this is amazingly clean. When you think back, Rick, the number of people and what happened there and the intensity and the duration, it was, first of all, there was wonderful leadership. Those young people, for the most part, were the ones that kept it going. It was just a fantastic thing to see. And you're right, it was amazingly clean and sanitary. And they emphasized that. Wash your hands. Make sure that, you know, you don't, if you take food, make sure you do it in the right way. I mean, they were organized, and it was a beautiful thing to see, and it was clean.
$50 an hour. $50 an hour to redress your government, to go and.
He's basically giving unions the finger as he goes out the door.
Yeah, well, just
good riddance.
Just don't go away. Don't go away mad. Just go away. Here's the other thing. You know, we've been talking about this voter ID stuff and talking about the Republicans wanting to hold down the vote. Well, they had this Reince Priebus, the RNC chairman from Wisconsin, who claims that, you know, Wisconsin's just riddled with fraud. I mean, the voter fraud is everywhere. Just riddled with it. Now, there was this study done by the Brennan Center for Justice. They claim that they found 7 cases of voter fraud out of 3 million votes cast in Wisconsin during the 2004 election. That would be a 0.0002%. So I don't know what his definition of riddled is, but I don't know that that's it. All of the 7 cases that were there involved people with felony convictions. So people who weren't supposed to vote, they were released from prison, they went to vote, evidently. You know, maybe they didn't know they were supposed to vote. Personally, I think if you do your time, you should be allowed to come back into society and exercise your right to vote. I don't think you should be precluded from voting.
Well,
because you paid your debt to society.
If that's what happened, they simply weren't on the rolls.
Well, that's what they're saying. These people showed up. They wanted to vote, and that's the seven. And I like what the report said the other day, that research found that voters are 39 times more likely to be struck by lightning than to commit voter fraud, and they're 3,500 times more likely to see a UFO than to commit voter fraud. So, again, riddled with it.
Again,
riddled.
It's a solution in search of a problem. Let's be honest.
Let's take a quick break. We're going to come right back with Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News Service. Stick around. Right back after this.
This is why we fight, why we
for the rest of us, Rick Smith.
We're out today with Mike, veteran, volunteer, and adventurer.
I tell a lot of people I'm a gray-haired teenager, because I act like one.
Mike loves life, and Capital Blue Cross helps him live it to the fullest, so he's a big fan.
I'm a Senior Blue PPO member. I have recommended Capital Blue Cross to 27 Medicare beneficiaries this year alone.
Mike must really care about his friends.
Capital Blue Cross has made the Medicare process easier, and they're very sincere, and they want to help you.
Mike, we've got you covered.
The bottom line is, if you care more, you do more.
For customer service, call 888-340-3978. It's 888-340-3978. Monday through Friday, 8 to 8, with extended hours October 15th through February 14th. Senior Blue PPO is issued by Capital Advantage Insurance Company, a Medicare Advantage organization with a Medicare contract. Capital Blue Cross and Capital Advantage Insurance Company are independent licensees of the Blue Cross Blue Shield Association.
The most important issues of the day. This is the Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. So it's been Herman Cain all day, and I still love the quote as well. I didn't do some of the things I've been accused of, and, well, I have not done many of the things that I've been accused of. So what did you do that you've been accused of? That would be my next question. Anyway, I've got Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News Service, on the line. Ellen, thanks for taking time for me.
Well, he wasn't doing anything terrible. He was just paying off a mistress.
Well, you know, look, at the end of the day, he's just a generous guy.
That's right. And he just didn't tell his wife about how generous he was. But, of course, now he even tweeted that he has women women for Cain.
Oh, have you seen the site? Oh, it's hysterical.
I did. I did. I went and looked at it right before I got on the air with you.
And, you know, the question is which of his staffers are taking those stock pictures and actually making up those posts?
That's a good question, too. And would you want to be the staff member that got caught doing that?
No. And, you know, the thing is
look. You kind of ruin your career.
You know, I look at all of this stuff, and, you know, I've said from the beginning, you know, he said he was running a different kind of campaign. And had he just come out and said, yeah, you know what? I'm human, but this isn't what it's about. What it's about is taking the country forward. I care about policy. Leave my bedroom life alone. You know, and
that's between me and my wife.
Exactly. Don't be a hypocrite about it. Don't lie about it, because that's what gets you into trouble.
Well, you know, I have a friend. Well, it's not a friend. She's actually a cousin of mine who's a criminal lawyer in Cleveland, Ohio. And she says what gets these guys in trouble every last time is the first lie.
Yep. It's that reaction. I mean, when the person stuffed that microphone in Clinton's face, and his gut reaction, that's what got him. Then he had to stick to it.
Right.
And personally, yeah. I don't care what people do. I really don't care what consenting adults do within the confines of their four walls. My elected leaders, I want to know what they're going to do to help our economy get better, to help poor people find jobs, to make sure that we have no homeless, we have no hungry, and we have a growing, prosperous economy. That's what I care about.
Well, yes, and I also do care, though, that they don't lie. That would be nice.
Exactly, but, you know, again, you know, I don't care what he does in the confines of his four walls. Just say, yeah, I did it. You remember the French guy, Jacques Chirac, when Clinton was going through all that stuff, and he went to some state function with his wife and his mistress?
Right.
You know,
and then both of them showed up at somebody's funeral.
Yeah, I mean, see, that's fine by me. Be honest about it. So do you think Herman's going to stay? Herman staying or going?
I think he stays.
I hope so. Because, you know, come January, I want to be able to see the guy. I'm hoping, I'm praying that, you know, possibly we
I know,
get...
I was thinking in my radio role, what is it going to be like without Herman Cain?
Nobody. I don't think anybody's going to come. Because the rest of them are not all that exciting.
That's for sure. But Newt is always good for copy.
Yeah. Okay, well...
I mean, he can be the gift that keeps on giving, too. Because he often says things that just really make people crazy.
Yeah, well, but I see him as really kind of a semi-intelligent. I shouldn't say that. He's an intelligent guy. Herman, I see him as more reactionary, going to just throw stuff out to get a reaction, or you know maybe not know at all. So to kind of be fair, do you think little Jesse Jr., do you think he's in trouble?
I don't know. I don't know. I know that they're reopening some claims on him. But I don't know. It's hard to.
Was
know,
he involved
really
with Blago?
It's hard to know where they're going with it and how much is going to stick.
Yeah, I'm interested to see how this goes. So another Republican debate coming up. I mean, how many of these are we going to have?
Well, I guess we're going to have a lot of them. In fact, over the New Hampshire primary, there is one both Saturday night and Sunday night. Like, who cares?
Yeah, I mean, if you haven't made your mind up by then, I mean, you're not going to really get that last-minute voter. But I guess the next one coming up, December 27th?
Yes, that is going to be, well, there may be one or two before that, but I definitely know that there is one that they've now put in on the 27th. This Newsmax is doing it, and they are asking none other than Donald Trump to be the moderator.
Is he going to fire any of them?
I don't know. But can you imagine?
Oh, this ought to be fun. I mean, but there's part of me that goes, you know, because I was just looking at some of the story just a minute ago. We were talking about that this cycle, the candidates have really done it on the cheap. They haven't spent a lot of money on TV ads.
They haven't needed to. They've had all the debate.
And part of my philosophy has always been publicly finance the election and do these things. Give them airtime. Give them exposure so they don't have to buy it. And I think this is the right direction. As much as, you know, as much as I don't, I love these debates.
Yeah, it's closer to public financing, which is very good.
Yeah, I love these debates because they're comedy in action. Bill Clinton thinks Obama's going to win.
That's what he said in a public television interview that he thought President Obama was going to win.
Yeah, I think so, too, because you look at Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, and I just don't see anybody who's... I mean, you look at what John Danforth said. He's embarrassed by them. At some point, you got to look at the Republican Party and say, you guys just didn't throw out the best and brightest there.
Right, and people who are the best and brightest in their party just don't want to get eaten up in that crazy... merry-go-round.
Yeah, who wants to go through the meat grinder? My wife told me I'm never allowed to run for anything, not even dog catcher. Because she doesn't want to know what I've done.
Right, exactly.
And my problem is I would be honest about it and probably brag about it, so that would be a bad thing. But the good thing, the reason I agree with Bill Clinton is the unemployment rate has come down just a little bit. There are a bunch of reasons for it, but if the economy does continue to get better little bit by little bit, I think he's shooed in.
Well, I do, too, and I think that, again, if it can, look, he got it down 0.4%, and it actually had been up a little bit above, not 9.1, I think. And so by doing that, I mean, again, if he were to even get it down a half percentage point over the next 10 months, that's a lot.
Yep. If only we could get the Republicans to stop obstructing and delaying and stalling and doing this nonsensical stuff. I mean, the jobs bill they just passed, what was it, the Regulatory Accountability Act. Exactly. Explain to me how that's going to create jobs other than maybe polluting the water and the air so we have to clean it up.
Well, that's right. I mean, they think that actually somebody did a study and showed that regulations actually create jobs because what they're doing is they're able to come up with solar things, they're able to come up with all kinds of things, and that regulations actually created more jobs than not having regulation.
Yeah. So, I'm kind of, you know me, I'm a little pessimistic about the future election coming up, but I looked at Massachusetts, and I have some optimism there, because, I mean, Scott Brown's kind of doing some dumb things here lately, especially around the unemployment thing. But Elizabeth Warren, I think she's doing some of the things she needs to be doing.
Well, she's doing very well. She's doing very well in collecting money, and people seem to be pretty pleased with her. What is happening is that Wall Street is freaking out that Scott Brown may not win. They raised him a lot of money. Now, he did vote. To his credit, he was the 60th vote necessary to get the finance overhaul bill done.
As weak as it
and
is.
He did do that, and so that's a good thing. But the fact is, he's still a Republican.
And if you need no other reason, that would be it. Lastly, the Justice Department, I guess, has released a ton of stuff here lately?
Yes, and this they did what's called a document dump. The judge picked it up. They picked it up and called it a document dump, but it is what it is called in Washington. And they did that late Friday. So what they're trying to do is release a lot of papers that deal with the way that this Fast and Furious came down. And it's pretty clear that the original letter to Congress was not exactly how things came about.
Well, it'll be interesting because, you know, somebody, you know, there's a lot of money to go into that because I have a few of my gun nut friends who think that's what's going to bring down Obama, other than the fact that he's signing on to some UN thing about guns, which the NRA's got them all whipped up into a frenzy about.
But, yeah, for sure. What can I say?
It just is what it is.
Look, I think they're not going to go anywhere.
Well, no, but it makes for nice something to talk about. Ellen, always great to talk to you. Have a great weekend.
Have a great weekend.
We shall try. I'll talk to you on Monday. Thanks so much. Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News Service. Now to find out what we've got going on Sesame Street. What do you got for us, Moppet?
Thanks, Rick. Our U.S. Senator, Senator Toomey, who is the junior senator, had made a little noise this week, made some news. He has proposed working in a bipartisan manner with two Democrats. He has reached across the aisle. He has proposed, him and Chuck Schumer from New York, who is by no means a conservative, they are both proposing legislation to create jobs by making it easier for firms to be traded publicly on the stock market. The initiative is designed to boost emerging companies' access to capital by making it easier for them to go public. It is, in fact, Toomey's second bipartisan initiative in the last 2 days. On Wednesday, Toomey joined with U.S. Senator Claire McCaskill, who's a Democrat from Missouri, in proposing another end to congressional pork barrel spending projects known as earmarks. The legislation is intended to make permanent the temporary moratorium on earmarks set to expire at the end of 2012. Now, here's my gut feeling, Rick. I think the first initiative has a reasonable chance that he has joined with Schumer, and I'm glad to see. I have some real reservations about Toomey. We disagree on a whole plethora of issues, but I was glad to see that he's willing to work in a bipartisan manner. I think that first initiative to create jobs, I think, has a chance. However, when you're talking about earmarks, that's very controversial. Yes, it is true. The critics of earmarks say, look, a lot of it is just pork barrel spending. There's others who will say, and I think you can justify the fact that a lot of these earmarks, in fact, bring jobs to congressional and senatorial districts. At the end of the day, there's too many people who use them not only to bring in jobs, which is what they're supposed to do, but it also helps them get reelected. And I'm not so sure that they're going to be successful at eliminating earmarks, but we shall see. But my gut feeling says you're not going to eliminate it. Controversial issue coming up. The Supreme Court is going to hear the constitutionality of the Obama health care law. Members of both parties have criticized two of the Supreme Court justices. Supreme Court Justice Thomas has been criticized by the Democrats. Supreme Court Justice Kagan has been criticized by the Republicans, saying they both should not appear. Kagan, in fact, in the year 2010, was a Solicitor General. Now, she claims when she knew that she was going to be appointed to the Supreme Court, she kind of slacked off and really didn't have a lot to do with the law. Now, in Thomas's part, his wife has been engaged and worked for several organizations that were adamant and worked to repeal the Obama law. She has also set up her own Tea Party affiliate. I do not believe at the end of the day, as much as they've been criticized, and I personally think they should recuse themselves, I think at the end of the day, even though they've been roundly criticized, I think they will, in fact, sit on the Supreme Court. Now, you have someone who's been a vociferous critic of the fact that they probably will sit on the Supreme Court and hear this case. Jonathan Turley, who's a law professor at George Washington University, has said this. The apparent problems for both parties undermines the integrity of the court and the legitimacy of any final ruling in this historic case. They're responsible for those apparent problems and in the interest of the court as an institution should recuse themselves in my view, and I agree. However, I do believe they will in fact stay on the Supreme Court for this very, very historic and controversial issue. Back to you, Rick.
All right, let's take a quick break. Right back after this, to wrap things up and head into the weekend. Right back after this. Stick around.
The Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better.
For many, the 8-hour day is the standard, but it wasn't always this way. The original American workday was from sunup to sundown, following the demands of an agricultural workday. Over time, the nation became more industrialized and workers moved from individually owned, self-sufficient farms to factories, taking workers from their homes and families. Factory owners demanded the agricultural sunup to sundown workday, forcing workers to toil long hours in grueling conditions. Workers began to collectively organize in pursuit of more time for family, education, and recreation. The cry of 8 hours for work, 8 hours for rest, and 8 hours for what we will grew louder. For a century, the 8-hour day was viewed as the holy grail of the labor movement, and for this hallowed vision, workers sacrificed, often with their blood and their lives. The first strike for shorter hours occurred in May of 1791 in the city of Philadelphia, where carpenters protested a day's wages, paying the same in January as was paid for a longer day in July. Chicago in 1886 was home to one of the largest showings of solidarity. Some 80,000 workers turned out to support the 8-hour cause. It was in Chicago's Haymarket Square that a terrorist bomb and the blazing guns of company-paid police cost policemen and numerous workers their lives and their blood. As a result of the Haymarket tragedy, 8 innocent men were tried and convicted for a crime they did not commit. 4 of the men were hung. The Haymarket Square tragedy was but one of many battles in which working men, women, and children shed blood, tears, and flesh in the pursuit of 8 hours for work, 8 hours for rest, and 8 hours for what we will. This Rick Smith Show Labor History Moment was made possible by a grant from the Labor Education Center at IUP. For more information, visit www.therickSmithShow.com.
We're proud defender of the American dream. Rick Smith.